Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 334, airing January 1st, 2012, the best of 2011. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. And by squarespace.com, the secret behind exceptional websites. Save 30% for the next 3 months when you sign up for squarespace.com. Use the offer code TWIT01. And by Ford, featuring available voice-activated sync. Sync gives you versatile access to music, podcasts, and more from just about any device. Check it out in the new 2012 Ford Focus and at Ford.com/technology.
Well, hello and happy holidays to you. Leo Laporte here, Chief Twit. Yeah, you know what's coming. We don't have a new show for you this Sunday. I'm sorry. We're doing a best of. Hey, it's the week after Christmas. Nobody's in town. And we thought there may be a few good things happened in the year 2011 that we could look back at. Remember, if you haven't seen it, it's new to you. This is actually, we'll kick off with a tribute. TWiT wouldn't exist if it weren't for all the great people we bring on TWiT. That's one of the fun things about the show for me, is getting some of the best tech journalists in all of the world to come on our show. Here's a little montage, some highlights of the variety of hosts we've had on TWiT all year long. Enjoy.
And yes, we're back for a brand new year, 2011. And I thought, given a brand new year, I'd bring in the three oldest farts I know. In fact, I believe combined, we've got between the three of us, four of us, we've got 250 years of experience. Starting in the lower right-hand corner. I'll do this in reverse. Larry just observed that you have the three longest running technology columnists in America who are still writing on the air right now, starting with Larry Magid, who is at CBS News and his website, larrysworld.com. Barack Obama is joining us. Wait a minute! I don't think... his lips don't move. Where'd you get that, John?
This is part of the gift you sent me. You sent me this fez that says TWiT on it.
And there's your MacBook Air, yeah.
A second,
I
and then you sent me Barack's head.
Hey, Jerry.
Hi.
Great to have you.
Windows is all right once you figure out how it works, but it's just like going from Windows to Mac is always a little confusing.
Yeah.
And with Macs, everything is either very simple or it's utterly impossible. So you don't have to fight with it. You don't figure out how to do it. It just either just works or you give up.
I like that. That's very apt. It's time.
Here we go.
For TWiT.
Whoa!
Oh my God! Champagne's all over the place. It is the 6th anniversary episode of This Week in Tech. And you know what's so cool? We got all of the original characters together again. We got the old band back together again. Here, Kevin, a little champagne.
Thank you, sir.
Kevin Rose.
Let me pour you a glass.
Formerly CEO of Dig, host of Dig Nation, part owner of Revision, or I guess full owner of Revision 3. I don't know who owns Revision 3. Part. And there was something else. Oh, that Milk thing. He's in a Belgian trance band.
That's right.
Lead singer. Milk Inc. Kevin Rose, great to have
drummer.
You back.
Thanks for having me.
In the studio. Thanks for coming up.
I'm stoked to be here. 6 years. That's insane.
6th year. We're going into our 7th year, and it is, I'm just really thrilled.
We should tape this at the 21st Amendment.
I know.
Yeah, well,
that, now, I'm not counting that one. That was TWiT Zero, which you were all at. I don't know if, Robert, were you there at the first one?
No, I think I was like the second one.
Yeah. I still have those MP3s we used to have.
I could play it if you want to hear them. We still have them online. If you go to twit.tv/one.
There was no video back then at all, right?
No, we didn't do video. The first video was episode 23, I think.
You recorded on probably an $800 DAT player, and you could probably buy something that does that now.
It was crappier than that. Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you.
You probably do it with the cell phone and it sounds just as
easy. You want to hear the first?
All right, this is a slate.
We called it Revenge of the Screensavers.
Oh, yeah.
Except I had to bleep it because G4 says please don't.
Number one.
David Prager is also here in the studio with us. Great to have you.
Great to be back.
From Revision 3, also here, Robert Heron, Heron Fidelity. And you were on the first one, weren't you? Yeah, I think it was Robert, Kevin, Patrick Norton, and he's in absentia. Okay. David wasn't on the first one, but he was on zero. So.
Oh, okay, I wasn't on zero. I was on number one.
Here's Robert. And I was pulling you all up on Skype on one instance of Skype.
And then we had the backup with the DAT recording.
Yeah.
Man, cheers. Cheers.
Cheers.
Wow, what a...
Robert Tarrant.
Is it 10 more years?
Hi, Robert.
10? Is that all I get?
To another decade. All
right, 20.
We enter our seventh year of This Week in Tech. John C. DeVore, people say, well, where's John? John C. DeVore did not join the show till episode 5. You're right, Kevin. Our first video episode wasn't till 23. We did that at the Apple store. And I'm all sweaty in it because it was just me running around wiring the whole thing up. And I just worked up a hell of a sweat. I forgot it was video, I guess.
That was challenging.
And Roger McGuinn was with us.
You were there for that, right?
That one.
I remember doing
one
in the Apple store.
At the Apple store, yeah.
Yep. And then we started doing it in a bar for a while. Remember that? That didn't work out so well.
Oh, it was up here.
Yeah.
That was kind of fun, though. You bought all those Canon XL2?
That's what you got all around you. I bought those because I wasn't doing video, so I bought these cameras, $14,000 worth of cameras, thinking we were going to do video, and then we abandoned it because it was such a bad idea. It was so hard to do it in bars and coffee shops. Came back here, continued to do it for audio. Just started video about 3 years ago. And now we're streaming 40 hours a week. We had 55 million downloads in the last 12 months, 5 million a month now.
That is awesome.
And we're building a 10,000 square foot studio, which we can barely afford. So,
but you need it.
But you can see we're jammed in this room. I can't do any more shows. We'll be right back with a great panel. We've got Brian Brushwood in studio, Nilay Patel from thisismynext.com, Danny Sullivan from searchengineland.com, and my good friend... what's his name? And he'll be there. He is the Gmail blog. No, Tom, I've screwed up here. There we go.
I can give you a hint.
Scott Johnson. There we go. No, God damn it. There he is. No, wait a minute. There he is. No, I give up. John, we'll get you Scott later. It's time for Twit. Time to talk about the tech news of the week. I am back, and I want to thank Tom Merritt for doing such a great job for me while I was gone. Episode 290. Now, I missed a couple, but boy, we have a great panel joining us right now, starting with Kara Swisher, who actually came to the studio with her dog, Phineas.
I did. Hello.
Very nice. From allthingsd.com.
The brains of the operation.
Phineas is?
Yeah.
He's actually about the most adorable dog I've ever seen.
I got him at the pound, and I urge everybody to adopt dogs.
Rescue dogs. Oh, is he a sweetie. And we have a great panel, starting with the throbbing Joshua Topolsky. He's the editor-in-chief. I like it. Maybe if I don't say anything, we'll just go away. Editor-in-chief of Engadget.com. He seems to be Cyloning a little bit.
Just a little bit, just for you.
He's a little throbbing. Great to have you, Joshua. It was a big week for iPad 2. We'll get his take on that. That lady is Gina Smith, my old friend. Who, you know, she was on Twit a few weeks ago. She's the new editor-in-chief of Byte Magazine at Byte.com, BYTE.com, which is coming back, I'm happy to say.
Yeah. Get the shirts.
Okay, this is the ugly side of the table. Let's take a look at the attractive side of the table. Joining us right now from TechCrunch.com, Alexia Tsotsis. It's great to have you finally for all this time.
Very nice to meet you.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I haven't met you. Pleased to meet you. How are you?
You.
Thank you very much for being here. Sitting to her left, Jolie O'Dell, formerly of Mashable, now at VentureBeat. Congratulations on the new gig.
Thank you.
It's great to have you both. And you know what the deal is. We talk about the week's tech news interspersed with profit-making commercials.
I think Odoctor is beautiful.
Exactly.
I don't think he's ugly.
Oh, I'm going to have like luck for a year.
I
need a lottery ticket and a rabbit's foot. I'm good.
Hey, you shaved your head just for the show today.
I did. I keep it smooth for you, Uncle Leo.
Now, Alexia drove up and I understand mm-hmm. that she was reading you the stories, so you know what we were talking about
today. Yes, because I don't know how to read.
We have a great team here. Again, all in studio with us, which I really like. It's fun. And I kind of mockingly call this the couples twit, because it is. It's two couples. You don't mind me calling you a couple, do you?
It's not a secret.
Sarah Lane, the host of The Social Hour, iPad Today, TNT, my old friend from Tech TV.
Hi, Leo.
It's good to see you.
I'm very rarely here on a Sunday. It's kind of fun.
It's a little quieter.
Yeah.
And yet there's a much larger studio audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah. Also joining us, her beau. Can I call you a beau?
We've done promise rings, so yeah.
Have you really?
Where's my promise ring?
No, he was talking about MG and I have done promise rings. MG Siegler, my beau, is here. Of course, the best writer on TechCrunch.com. Don't tell Mike I said that.
I won't.
And Paris Lemon on Twitter. Good to have you both. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Is this your first time on Twitter? No, you've been on Twitter many
times. I've been
on
Twitter before, but not in a while. So.
Yeah, not since Austin, probably.
It feels like the first time. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's when it was.
And then to my right, we have yet another couple, the great Veronica Belmont from TechZilla.com, who's been on Twitter many a time.
Hello.
About.me/Veronica. Also the host of Sword and Laser with Tom Merritt.
Yes.
Which is a wonderful show about sci-fi and fantasy books.
Yeah, we actually just saw George R. R. Martin down at the Fox Theater in Redwood City.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you get his autograph?
He was doing a book signing.
The author of Game of Thrones, yeah. Clash of Kings. I'm just starting Clash of Kings, so I'll be ready for the next season.
Good.
I love those books. They're
great.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Sitting next to her longtime companion. Right.
Couples twit, nice. Most awkward twit ever.
I feel like Bob Eubank.
I think we need to. No, this is not the couples. This is not couples twit. This is Beards versus Bangs.
Beards versus Bangs.
Right.
That's
what we're doing.
Right. Look at that. Wow, that's absolutely
true.
You're on. And I am just thrilled. We've been able to get people in studio for almost every show since we moved to the Brick House studio. But there's one guy that I always wanted, that one guy I could not get for the longest time. Mr. Merlin Mann is in here in studio with us.
Hi, Leo.
Mr. 43folders.com, MerlinMann.com, and his great show on the 5x5 Network with Dan Benjamin, Back to Work, Productivity, Communication, Work Barriers, Constraints, Tools, and More. Is there anything you left out?
Yeah.
Anime. There's no anime in that show.
Oh, yeah. We have a whole manga. Is that how you pronounce it? Yeah, manga corner.
Manga corner.
Yeah.
5x5.
Thank you for having me. For those who haven't been here, it's extraordinary in here. It's a lot like the Captain Nemo ride.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a thrill ride. Well, we're really glad to have you back, Merlin Mann. Very nice to see you. Haven't seen you in ages.
Big head.
Also here, really glad to have him up here for the first time, Mr. Harry McCracken from the Technologizer blog. Great to see you, Harry.
It's nice to be here
in
person.
I don't think we've ever had you in person.
Never. If I knew you were so close to Copperfields, I would have come down.
You like the bookstore?
Love that place.
We have a great independent bookstore. Still, one of the last places in the world, I think, with an independent bookstore. And also, unfortunately, we haven't got Dwight to come up from Houston. Maybe someday soon. Dwight Silverman of the Houston Chronicle. blog.cron.com/techblog. Hey, Dwight!
Hey, Leo, how are you doing?
Very well.
Hot here. It's really hot
it's
here.
It's muggy, I bet. I bet, though.
No, it's not too muggy, but I'll tell you something. I'm going to show you something that's kind of amazing.
Whoa, no, that's not real.
Yep, that is real.
Wow.
That's now.
Those look, that number degrees. Looks as fake as the TMZ picture of Steve Jobs. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I think you've been photoshopping it.
It's the second day in a row it's been 109 here.
Horrible. It's time for Twit. We are at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, Nevada. And when I say we, I mean we. Boy, I think this is the biggest panel we've ever had. And it's not full yet. There are more people still to come. Let me introduce everybody. I'll start from my right here with the great Robert Herron.
Hey, hello, Leo.
It's good to see you again. I haven't seen you in ages. Robert's an original Twitter.
Oh, it's good to be here.
From the very beginning.
How's CS treating you?
It's great. You do home theater, so we'll talk a lot about big screens in just a little bit.
Awesome.
His company is Herron Fidelity.
It is.
Yeah, and you still do the HD Nation on as part of Techzilla these days. Yeah,
exactly.
Also, if we slide the mic to the right, because we have to share mics, Becky Worley from ABC News is here, and TNT, of course. Hi, Becky.
That's right. Great to be here with you.
My old friend. You said this is the best CES ever.
It's my best CES ever.
Well,
no joke.
I don't believe it.
I'm not just being perky. I'm just having a great time.
She toned down the hair. I read her Facebook. She said, I realized I was being defensive and doing the helmet hair thing.
Don't use hairspray as a crutch. It's not a good idea.
She almost poked my eye out.
That's what Schwood's here for.
We'll see that in a moment. First, let's go to table two. And Tom Merritt, good to have you.
Hello, Leo.
From TNT. He's been doing a great job here, TNT and everything else, covering the show
floor. I live at CES now.
Yeah.
I feels don't like remember it, my it? Life before this.
Me neither.
That's actually a true feeling.
It really is.
Have
I
we
get
always
it every
been
year.
Here?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this it's is only my the home third now. Day. You understand?
I know. That's so ridiculous. Weird.
Actually, your fourth day, my third. Yeah. Sarah Lane is here. Thank you for being here. Sarah Lane, also from TNT and iPad today. We did our. Yeah, she doesn't need your mic. She
I've
has her very
mic.
Own.
Thanks, though.
She also has the largest laptop.
I do. It's a 17-inch laptop, the largest laptop in the land.
That's only because the guy to your left didn't bring his, Brian Brushwood.
Rocking the iPad. Hey, it's my first CES ever.
Is this?
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to get a CES. We're going to see how it feels to have your cherry popped in Vegas in just a little bit. Okay. That's actually good. Now, we need to have one person who's never been here before to kind of give us some perspective. All right. iJustine is also here. Justine
Hello.
Is Zarek.
iJustine.com.
You don't need a computer.
I got my mini iPad.
You're set. The mini iPad is all you need. It's great to have you here, Justine.
Thank you.
You were working for Spike for
a
little bit. Yeah,
yeah,
that's neat.
New GGTV. They're doing a new tech segment. So.
And you're the tech reporter?
Yes.
That's fantastic.
It's really
I saw
fun.
You sitting in a very cool, was it Trans Am or something? It was a
I'm
neat
not
old
sure
car.
What the car was.
Yeah,
not
I don't
a big
know,
car
I'm
person,
not either.
But.
Yeah, but it was nice. It was nice.
Well, hello, Austin! And we are having a blast.
Not you.
A whole bunch of twit heads with us today, and you are great. You guys are great. We are at South by Southwest, which, of course, is where the geeks gather every year. Nerd Fest 2011, South by Southwest Interactive. And we have such a great bunch of people on Twit. We have probably 20 people on Twit, so we're going to move through it pretty quickly and maybe get some more people in here and everything. But let me introduce the beginnings. What a great panel to start it off, starting on all the way on stage right. With Ryan Block from GadgetGDGT.com. Sitting next to him, his partner, Peter Rojas, also from Gadget.com.
Yeah.
Jeff Jarvis from This Week in Google, the author of What Would Google Do? Yeah, Jeff. Twig. Love Jeffrey. Next to him, Gina Trapani, a formerly Lifehacker, now SmarterWay.org. Everybody's favorite geek. She's got the Geek Watch, too. She's got the... That very cool watch with the nano
wake
on
up,
it there.
Wake
Look
up.
At that. Oh, that's awesome. Baratunde Thurston in the house. He's from that fine site, L'Oignon. L'Oignon. They were handing out onion papers. There's actually a physical paper.
We have a special South by Southwest edition
that's
of America's
awesome.
Finest Newspaper. Content rolling out this week on the web. It's
awesome.
Amazing. It's incredible. We're covering it. Pseudo-live.
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 I love the onion. It's awesome.
Good.
It's always good to have you on, Baratunde. Also sitting right next to him, at Callie Lewis. Callie Lewis from GeekBeat.tv. And my crowd surfing partner here, Lisa Bettany.
There's one person there would not be Twit without. It's this guy, John C. Dvorak. Here are his greatest hits.
Oh, that's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
Catch Tom Merritt every single day.
Hey,
we
thanks,
cover
Leo.
Tech
Here's
news.
A look at some
You're
of the
welcome,
stories.
You're welcome, Tom.
Can I ask Tom a question?
Yeah, would you go ahead? Tom, don't go yet.
Tom, I wanted to ask you a question about that phone.
That rim thing. That, you know, the rim thing.
That camera thing going on?
Yeah, what the hell is...
Where's it going to be again? What was the website?
Kicks off BlizzCon down in Anaheim. And Saturday, October 22nd,
he's a little more limited than Siri, I just got to tell you right now.
All that and more is what we'll be keeping an eye on.
Oh, thank you, Tom.
Hey, Tom, before you go. I wonder, where's that science festival in, where is that? Where is it? Tom? Hello?
You know, that's an interesting question, John. I'm going to have to get back to you because I have to go cover this thing right now. But hold that thought, and next time you're on Tech News Today, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, right. Good work. I was wondering how long it would take.
Just keep trying. Tom Merritt and Tech News Today with Ayaz Akhtar and Sarah Lane on every Monday through Friday, 2:30 in the afternoon. You get your daily fix of tech news with people who actually know what they're talking about on the Twit Network. What are you doing? What are you doing, John?
I'm watching you.
You're being disruptive.
I am. Yes, I'm sorry.
Give
you
me that
NSFW
chewing gum.
You started acting
I'm
like the
send
show.
You the
Everyone
principle.
Has to have gum.
Anyway, thank you for being here, Brian Brushwood. Tom Merritt, the host of TNT, our daily... actually, how are you going to do this?
What?
The week ahead.
Oh, I'll just go over there and do it.
Will you just go over there and do it?
Normally, I'm just over there.
Yeah.
Right? So I'll just
walk
over.
Do we want to do that now?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
We'll see.
Let's see. Let's check in right now. Tom Merritt, who hosts TNT, he does the... I'll give him a couple minutes to get over there. He does our great daily news show, 2:30 p.m. Pacific, 5:30 Eastern, Monday through Friday. Tom, what's coming up on the week ahead?
Hey, yeah. Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a look at what we'll be covering on Tech News
bogus.
Today in the week
this
ahead.
This is bogus.
Today, is the last day of Science Hack Day in San Francisco. Also, Mario 3D Land launches. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
Thank you, Tom.
Wow, that was that's
you went right over
there.
Ran over there. Did that.
One he, take
it was
merit.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
How did you
well done.
All that, Tom.
That is amazing.
Well, Eileen was inserting those on the fly.
That's amazing. We good. Have the best production
Did
team in the world.
Did you notice that you have a different T-shirt on now? Did you change it on the way back?
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. Don't try that. We know better than
Why
that.
Why would you think that?
It's called
you
magic.
You didn't have that purple thing on just a minute ago. What'd you do? Put it back on?
It slides under the sleeve. So you probably just didn't see it.
Keep trying, John.
The Grinch of Twist.
Continuity was perfect.
I'm not going to be beaten at this game. You know, I think for one thing, Elop is very much, he's got the same cadence and style of Bill Gates when he speaks. And there's a certain cadence that comes out of Microsoft that is you know, it's just Microsoft-y. And I've run into a bunch of these guys, and they come out of Microsoft as executives, and they go to other companies, and they do the same thing. They have all these ideas, and they think that they're going to be successful with them. But I'm always thinking they never seem to get it, that when they were at Microsoft, they were part of a monopoly company that really didn't have to do a lot of, you know, original thinking. And they didn't have to make the right decision. The right decision at Microsoft was, let's don't kill Office.
Yeah.
And let's don't kill Windows. And we, you know, that's it. That's the only decision you have to make. Anything else you do is just, you know, is gravy. And
so do you think this is not a good idea?
I think it's not a good idea. I think they should have at least, although nobody asked the question, I was very disappointed in the media. Because they didn't ask the question of Elop whether or not they kept the option for Android open. He did mention that they're keeping...
It doesn't sound that way.
Doesn't sound that way, but he did keep the Mego option open, so it's a possibility.
What they did is they said, we're going to partner up with Microsoft. They're going to give us Windows Phone 7. We're going to give them NavTech mapping. And it's going to be a tight partnership. We'll be able to actually change the interface, which nobody else has been able to do. Symbian becomes what they call a franchise platform, which I guess is Finnish for we're phasing it out.
Right, exactly.
And then Mego becomes a research and development platform. They're going to put out one Mego device this year, and he kept saying today in his announcement, and it's going to be the disruptive platform of the future. We're saving it for disruptive stuff. I don't know what that means at all.
Well, the other thing... Anyway, there's a couple things going on. In Finland, there's a walkout at a couple of the factories. The employees are irked about this guy and the whole process. And there's a term going around around Finland called GOOF, G-O-O-F, and it refers to get out of Finland. Because everybody believes that that Microsoft is either going to do a deal and either buy most of Nokia and outsource it to China and pretty much close down, killing 150,000 jobs in Finland. This is what they believe in Finland, and so this is problematic because if you've been to Finland or if you study how the Finns think, it's not very compatible with Microsoft. The way they think in Redmond, Washington. It's just this culturally different. I think this guy should have taken a little more cultural anthropology. I think there's a lot of issues here. I think this is going to be fun to watch what happens. I mean, I hope they're successful, but I doubt if they will be. And
I'm,
I also
I'm
think
so
they're going to...
I'm just surprised because I think if Nokia doesn't evolve in this way, there's no way they're going to stay alive. I mean, Microsoft excels at getting their software out on devices, you know, whether it's you know, Windows or Windows Phone 7 or whatever platform they're trying to spread across the world. That's what they do best. And Nokia has been making hardware forever, and they make more hardware for phones than I think anyone else in the world at this point. So the idea of getting Windows Phone 7 on Nokia devices across the world, I think it makes perfect sense for both brands.
Well, it may
not be good for the people in Finland, but
I ask a couple of questions then. One, why can't they do the same thing with Android, which has apps, and we're in the world of apps, and Microsoft has none. They have 8,000, I think.
They're growing apps, though, and they're going to absorb all the apps from Nokia into their store.
It's weak.
Also.
Your argument, how would that not apply exactly the same way to Android? Here's what the problem is, as far as I'm concerned, is that the Windows 7 phone, straight up, in straight competition with Android and the iPhone, shows no traction. Now,
I disagree.
Well, I mean, I'm just reading the monthly numbers. Apparently, they sold a whole bunch of phones right off the bat, and then the thing went dead flat after they filled the channel up.
They haven't released any numbers. They haven't released any numbers.
No, there's some research companies that have seen that have said, I'll have to dig this up now, apparently, to back up my own story. But when
Microsoft has a hit, they release numbers and they trumpet them, and they have not released any numbers here. And I think that that they are not selling these at all. When you use one of these phones, when you use a Windows phone, it's a great phone to use it. But you know, the problem is that no one's going to try it in the era of Android and in the era of the iPhone. I don't know necessarily that the race is over, but you got two companies that in terms of mobile have become clueless, and they're drowning and they're trying to cling to each other in order to survive. Mm-hmm. And there's no indication that they'll do better together than they would have separately. They won't be any faster. They won't be any more agile. And they're not going to have the same kind of mind share that Android and Apple do at the moment.
I kind of disagree on that, because I think, like I said earlier, Nokia makes really good hardware and they've got the reach worldwide, and Windows makes good mobile software. I think so anyway. And so I think the combination is actually a really good fit. And I think it makes the most sense for both of them to kind of go into a partnership together, and their powers combined, their Captain Cell Phone, I don't know. But, you know, Nokia didn't do a great job of making smartphones these days that people really fell in love with. And, you know, maybe with the combination of Windows Phone 7, it'll be something that they can do going forward. Because, I mean, there aren't going to be, you know, feature phones are the way of the past. It's smartphones and even lower priced smartphones going forward. And Windows, you know, Microsoft can make that happen for them.
Well, like the Indians like to say, two turkeys don't make an eagle.
So, TV app in your lap.
That's, by the way, the one thing.
TV app in your lap. That's
app
there
in your
you
lap.
Go. App in your lap. Get it. App,
there's
app,
an app
in your lap.
lap.com.
Hurry up.
Because you're probably the one guy who could be. What's that around here?
It's so far no problem. However, I do fear when I see these bandwidth caps put on, there are. I'll tell you, I've been hurt outside the U.S. in countries like Canada and Australia, where they have much lower bandwidth caps. People, many of our viewers in Australia can't watch the video because it would use up their bandwidth cap. And I fear that that time is rapidly coming to the United States. And it's by the way, it's not an interest of protecting their constrained resources, because, and John and I, you've had this fight many times with me over the cost of bits. I don't think it's that. I think it's to protect their entrenched businesses, their cable, premium cable
channels. Well, that
channels
could be, Leo, but let's take another look at this. What has the government done about all these antitrust deals? Every time an opportunity comes for them to say no to something like this AT&T upcoming buyout,
right,
they don't say no. They encourage it. So what is the government going to do if you put the FCC in charge? They're going to encourage more of this, and then who's going to get the thing is, I don't see that they're doing but anybody any good now. The net neutrality is a red herring, and it's all boiling down to the point where you're going to have to buy a license to do the show you're doing right now. That's the only way it's where it's headed. They haven't done anything any good for anybody. They're not stopping this AT&T merger, which is a disaster with T-Mobile. I don't want that. Nobody does.
Matter to get more milk, but I think having this kind of telemetry built into everything, and
it's all they're gonna hook everything up to power line IP. All the appliances in your house are gonna be.
Well,
that
they're doing it now. I've got a smart meter on my.
It's gonna be worse, and then eventually the refrigerator is gonna have an LCD screen on. It's gonna be hooked to the internet, and all you're gonna get every time you go to the refrigerator is an ad.
Yeah, Safeway.
Here, buy some more of this. Buy some more of that. There's a coupon. Hit this button. It'll print it out on your computer. I mean, who needs this aggravation? We got enough ads already. It's driving everybody crazy. It's ruining the world.
Philip K. Dick wrote a great short story about that, where ads on every possible surface.
Still think it's a good thing to put them in the urinals. You know, having an ad there.
You know what we have in our urinal? We have a little bumblebee.
Hey, by the way, your urinal,
it's broken.
Yeah. You have a high-tech urinal. It's broken.
It's broken.
You got a bunch of high-tech toilets here. By the way, never, if you go to this toilet, don't ever push the button that says RT.
It doesn't stand for retweet.
Yeah. Anyone who knows jokes will get that one.
Obviously, Scoble knew what you were talking about.
All right, let's talk about retweeting.
One last thing. Everybody's back in their seats. The only guy who doesn't.
Whoa!
He just shot Schwood.
That was very disturbing.
Shot Schwood.
To see a slowly walking JCD look and then just whip out a gun right at your face.
He fragged you, man.
And pulled the trigger.
Unbelievable. He should be on the
gaming
show.
There was some
part
of me that thought, this is how it ends. Assassinated by John C. Dvorak on Twitch.
It's always possible.
LeWeb is Loic Lemaire's entrepreneurial show that goes on in Paris December 6th, 7th, and 8th.
Junket.
It's not a junket.
No, we have to pay our own way.
And we are, Twit's going to be in Paris. We're going to have a booth there. We're going to interview people. We're actually going to broadcast from LeWeb for those 3 days.
Junket.
All. What company is, I don't understand, who's paying?
Did you not invite John?
Oh, that's it. He's grumpy. He's not. How could it be a junket if there's no company that we're sponsoring it? I don't understand what the junket part
is. It's a junket.
It's a junket? Well, if it's a junket, I like it. And
I want to be there, too.
Are you going to go home?
I am.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Well, I hope you and Scoble will come by the IBM booth.
For the junket.
The Twit coverage.
That's going to be
I think that's the show title. Junket.
Junket. Going to be a lot of fun. And then, yes, we will be at CES for another junket.
Junket.
A junket which costs us about $50,000. Is that okay?
It's okay.
Can
by
a junket cost you money?
Apparently it does with you. You're not doing it right.
I'm not doing it right. And. Steak's done. I don't know. What is that timer? Is that just to say hi? Oh, look.
No,
he's got
it's a tap bell. I've decided that everyone should have one of these tap bells.
I agree.
For their desk at work.
Nice.
And
so somebody, you're busy, you're hunched over the computer, you got this thing on your desk, bing. And somebody wants to talk to you.
That's a good idea. My kids would like me to have one at the dinner table because I'm always got my nose buried in a device. They could bing my bell.
You can ding Dad's bell. You can ding Dad's bell. Ding Dad's bell.
With apologies to Anita Bell. What is her name? Anita
Baker?
Baker. Anita.
Anita
Hot Pocket. Let's. I have to ask you both. Are you? I think John is a Windows user. Are you a Windows user, Becky?
No, I'm predominantly a Mac user, but we have Windows machines at home. I try and stay fluent on
both.
Me
too.
I think it's important in our jobs.
John, you mostly Windows, right?
Yeah.
So
mostly Windows.
Did you look with interest? If you go to Microsoft.com/PressPass, there's a lot of video of Steven Sinofsky at the D8 conference and then of somebody at the Computex conference in Taiwan demonstrating the new user interface. It looks like Windows Phone.
It's so weird.
I don't like it. I think I wrote a column about it. I think it's in PC Magazine. I think it's a disaster if they implement it.
Well, I'm sure they are. Clearly,
are we on cycle for disaster? What does it go? 98 disaster.
Emmy,
98 good.
Emmy was
bad.
Disaster. Windows XP good. Windows Vista disaster.
Bad.
Windows 7 good. So this would
be
disaster time.
That's what I'm pretty sure.
So we're right on track.
Yeah.
It's like the Star Trek movies.
That's what I'm saying.
Why don't you like it, John?
Well, I think for one thing, I don't think that the model, I think it's a done deal what a desktop computer should be like, how it should be used. That interface that we're talking about that they're trying to replace it with is for small screens. There's a reason it was designed the way it was designed. The reason that Steve Jobs brought it into play is because it was the thing you could use with your finger and a touch screen and a small touch screen. And you needed to,
have these icons
to move around. There's a rationale for it. There's no rationale for this stupid interface to be on a large 21-inch, 27-inch screen. It's crazy.
So we're talking about, just for people who haven't seen it or are listening, we're talking about the Metro UI that's on the Windows Phone 7. It has the large tiles that each represent sort of a concept or, like social or contacts or phone. But this would have specific – it's almost like they're trying to create almost like an expose interface – but for Windows, and using it, marrying it with the Metro UI that we've gotten to know on the phone.
It's a touch interface.
Exactly.
Now, here's what my theory is. My theory is that Microsoft has had nothing but difficulty adapting its operating system to the phone. And what they've always tried to do since the very beginning with Windows, before Windows Phone, when they had their first smartphones, is they took the big Windows interface from a desktop and put it on the phone. So now instead of separating these two as separate items, as separate things, they keep wanting to have them all the same because I think they figure that all their users are complete idiots and they can't go from one model to another. So they're going to take the phone model that they know works on small screens and move it to the desktop. Now, I think they can save themselves by having a little button you can push that would throw you
they
back
do.
To a reel.
They do. That's what's so strange about this is it really is just a shell.
It's a skin.
On top of it, what looks
stupid.
Like Windows 7.
Look at it.
Yeah.
You but have a picture of it up on this video. It looks dumb.
Yeah. This is the default that will show up on all computers that ship with this, and you have to revert back to the
Windows 7
UI.
It looks like a kiosk. Kind of thing you find at a kiosk at Macy's.
Well, all right. I see, and there's the start menu. So he slides it over in there on the right, and you can just jump underneath it. And so when you have Microsoft Excel or Office or whatever, and you need to have that kind of, let's face it, real Windows control, you can get there. But let me play devil's advocate here. One of the things that the iPad really proved to everybody is that there is a market for a simpler computing experience.
The iPad requires a touch screen interface that requires your finger or thumb or something like that to move things around. This is not what desktop computing is about. This even has a pop-up keyboard, which is idiotic. I have a real keyboard.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Why do I need this bull crap?
Well, I guess this is one UI for all devices. So if you've got
that's
a tablet.
That's the problem. They have
the problem.
Their heads up their butts with this one UI for everything they do, Notion. They're crazy.
Yeah.
I kind of feel
bad
for Microsoft.
Clear.
God, Dvorak. I miss you, man. That kind of, I mean, there's so many bad things going on in the world, but that this pisses you off so much. It's so comforting to me.
I'm mad about other stuff, too.
I'm still trying to play devil's advocate here.
I think it's a great tablet UI.
Look at
this. It's a tablet
really
UI.
Really good tablet UI, but yeah. Why try and put this
on? How do the HP Touch Smart sell? Because that's a touch desktop. With it's, you know, using Windows Vista or Windows 7. Look at this. They're very proud of this. That's got a split keyboard so you can type with your thumbs.
I don't think that they've been setting the world on fire, and I still
so
go
now,
back.
So now, see, you've got Excel. Now, so you have a normal experience, a Windows experience underneath, but you can slide it to get Tweet-O-Rama.
You know, that's,
see, there's the Explorer.
Great. This is great for that ubiquitous kitchen computer that every PC maker
and that's
wants
the touch
to sell.
Smart.
Right, the touch smart, right? So that you can touch, you can treat it like a tablet, but then you can move into a multitasking. You have more detailed input-output with a keyboard and a mouse, et cetera, et cetera. But
what if we're just old farts who just want things to stay the same?
No, that's not it, Leo. This the desktop metaphor, which was developed in 1980-something, 1984, I guess, mainly, or 82, or actually when the Xerox Start came out, established, and then it was tweaked and tweaked and tweaked. This is like the automobile. You can drive a 1935 car because it's been the model, how it works, where the gear
hasn't
shifts
changed.
Are, where the pedals
no,
are.
You're right.
It's finally established itself as this is the way it should be.
Right.
Why would you change it so radically out of the blue? This is like people dreaming up some crazy car where the wheel's in the middle and you
know
got
what,
you know, a periscope.
The irony is that tomorrow, on Monday, Apple will be talking about Lion, OS X Lion, its new operating system. And they're not even going this far. I mean, they have
of
a full screen
not,
mode.
Because they're not stupid at Apple.
No. Oh, John really regrets that Windows 8 RAM. In fact, I'm sure he's mad about us running it again. But hey, he was on fire. He was on fuego. And you know what? Time will only tell. But I have a feeling he might not be far wrong. John C. Dvorak has been a big reason why Twit's been so successful over the years. Twit's in its, sixth year. This will be year 7. Coming up, and we decided in 2011 to get more John on the show, and I think you'll agree, a Twit without John C. Dvorak is like a fish without a bicycle. We're going to take a break, come back with more, but first, a word from Audible.com, our sponsor since almost the very beginning on Twit, and for good reason. I've been an Audible subscriber since 2000. It'll be 12 years this January. 12 years! Of listening to great books on Audible. You know, when I first started listening to Audible books, they only had a few thousand titles. Now over 100,000 and more new titles all the time. In fact, it's pretty much become the case that when a big new book comes out, the same day the hardcover comes out in the bookstores, the audiobook comes out on Audible.com. It's why most of the time now I'm listening to the new books. And there's good reason. I don't have time to read. I'm sure you don't either. But we always have time when we're stuck in the car, working out at the gym, doing housework, working in the garden. There are plenty of times when you can't hold a book, But you would like to read a book. I probably wouldn't get much reading done all week long if it weren't for Audible. And yet there are hours and hours each day that I cannot read, but I can listen to Audible. That's why I recommend Audible, and I encourage you to give it a try. We've got a special deal for Twit listeners. Two books free. Go to audible.com, browse their 100,000 title collection. I'm sure you'll find some books you want to listen to. Really, the problem is that you only get two. Probably you'll find hundreds of books you want to listen to. This was a good one. I listened to this year. This was a perfect example. I got it in hardcover, I got it on the Kindle, and I got it on audible.com. And absolutely, the only way I could get through this 600-page book is because I was able to listen to it on Audible. I read it in 1 week. 1 week. I know many of you are probably still trying to slog through it. If you haven't read the Steve Jobs biography by Walter Isaacson yet, very good choice on audible.com. Another great one is that new Stephen King novel, November 22nd, 1963. Just started that. Unbelievably good. But that's just two. Here's the deal. Go to audible.com/twit2 and sign up for the Platinum account. That's going to give you credit for two books. You don't actually have to pick the books right away. You can now that you've signed up, browse. You have a whole month to pick your first two books. You can cancel at any time. There'll be no charge in that first month, but those books will be yours forever. So take your time, enjoy, browse the Audible stacks, find some books you want to listen to, and then sign up at audible.com/twit2. It plays on your iPad, your iPod, all the Apple devices, even the Zunes on the Kindles, yes. And, of course, on your computer. They've got a great iPhone and an Android app, too, by the way. The Android app is great. You have your whole library there. You download any book you want to listen to. In fact, for our trip for the holidays, I fired up the Android app and downloaded a ton of books, including that Stephen King book, and now I'm going to be ready to listen. See, there it is, 11/22/63. That's the book. Audible.com/twit2. Now, we continue on with our trip down memory lane, the year 2011, twit style. This was a big story. Google, in a shock to everyone, buys Motorola, one of the biggest Android phone manufacturers. Here's how we covered the story.
This was August, I usually think of August as a slow week for news, a slow month for news, but this was not a slow week.
No, this was absolutely not.
By any means.
Oh, did something happen?
Absolutely not.
Well, a couple of things. Let's start with the Monday.
We'll work our way through. Hour by hour.
Yeah, practically. A big shock, really before even the market opened on Monday, Larry Page announced that Google had spent $12.5 billion and purchased Motorola Mobility.
That's correct.
Shock for anybody here? Shock for me. Did you expect that, Peter?
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised. It's a big deal because they're buying a hardware company.
Right.
Even if they bought it for the patents or whatever reason, I mean, the fact that Google, which has always been about software and services, would, get so directly into the hardware business is a really big move. It's a big change for how Google thinks about itself as a company.
Some people posited that perhaps there's a message, Microsoft partnering with Nokia, Apple owns their hardware business, that maybe if you want to make it in smartphones, you need to have a hardware partner or be in the hardware business. That doesn't seem... Do you think that's true? And not for Android. Android's advantage is so many manufacturers.
Well, I mean, there's an argument to be made, right? Though the counter argument is that it didn't work very well for Palm and then HP.
we'll get to that in a moment.
But I think,
remember, that was Thursday.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. Spoiler alert.
That was Thursday. They didn't know on Monday. They didn't know.
Or did they?
Yeah, I mean, it is, it's about a battle of ecosystems, right? And it's about a battle of who can create, the best experience. And creating a great experience really means you have to not just create good hardware or great software. You have to really integrate those two things together in a way that consumers are going to, have an amazing problem-free experience most of the time.
It's a risk, though, to Google, isn't it? That Samsung and LG risk. And all these people will get pissed off.
What Apple does is hardware, software, but at the end of the day, they're a hardware company,
right?
And they'll say that.
Right.
At the end of the day, Google is an advertising company.
Not even a software company.
Not even a software company. And you can see that from Android. I mean, Android although it is the number one mobile service right now, it's a mess. They're doing what Windows did a decade ago, and I think that it's going to be really, really difficult for them to take over Motorola and integrate it and create great products in the next few years without shooting themselves in the foot at the same time.
It was about patents, wasn't it, Paul, really, ultimately?
Yeah, in fact, I expect them to get rid of the hardware a bit eventually.
Spin it off.
They don't need it, and it actually hurts their relationships with their partners.
Right.
Absolutely.
Google had about 1,000 patents going into this. They missed out on the Nortel patents. Apple and Microsoft made an unholy alliance to swoop those.
Cabal, I think.
Cabal would be a good,
the term we use.
On the hardware side, I do hope that they bring back the Sky Pager. Because it's just a great device.
You're kidding me.
And the StarTAC phone. And I think those were two excellently executed devices that really saved the world.
You're subtly making the point that Motorola mobility hasn't really been on cutting edge for a while.
I don't mean to diss Motorola, but I do think that those devices were actually really cool.
I love the StarTAC.
In terms of the patent thing, I mean, I joked earlier this week, like, I didn't... How many tech writers got into this business to write about patent law?
Right. And suddenly we are.
And it's just, it's really, like, I'm not even a full-fledged tech writer. I'm an enthusiast, and I love to talk about this stuff. But patents, no. Like,
yeah.
These guys should just fight. They should go out in the middle of a desert with, like, a sword, you know, some kind of broadsword or scythe or something, and just have it out. And Larry Page and Steve Ballmer go at each other's throats, and whoever wins gets the thing that they're fighting over, you know?
If it is about patents.
I wouldn't want to go up against that guy in a desert.
Oh, no, he'd be crazy.
It depends, though.
He's a berserker mode.
Warrior suit.
He's a big guy.
Is he quick? You know, size alone.
I don't know.
I feel like Larry Page is a little squirrely.
Fall on,
right?
Larry Page and just sit there and suffocate.
So in a battle...
This is what I wanted to bring our discussion to. I won. We're not talking about patents. We're talking about physical combat.
You did win. I like the sword thing. You forgot to mention Razor.
I did. I did forget to mention Razor.
The sword and a Razor?
No, the Razor, the
phone.
Device.
Oh,
that was a great phone, too.
The Razor.
Classic.
I mean, when they put Android on that, it's going to be epic. Epic.
But it will be 2.2.
It's about patents. It's about mutually assured destruction. Yeah. It's about having now, 12,000 patents to counter anybody who wants to come off.
I don't think it's just about patents.
No?
I don't think it's just about patents. I think it's also about them being really concerned about Android's long-term prospects.
Yeah.
Well, there weren't many if you get sued to death, right? And you know, Apple's going after Samsung saying you can't sell products in the U.S. because it's running, you know, because you're copying our phones.
Yeah.
And I think that's preliminary to suing Google. Or maybe they'll just sue everybody around.
They're going to sue everyone around. And then, yeah. You know, I mean, I think the frustrating thing is that Google missed a really big opportunity with the whole Nortel thing to kind of come out and say, look, this patent system is fundamentally broken. We're only playing this game because we have to. And we're going to start putting our efforts into lobbying, you know, Congress to change and, reform the patent system.
That's what came to my mind is there's $12.5 billion just basically thrown away. That could have been used for all sorts of innovation because you had to defend yourself against patent lawsuits.
Or buying every member of Congress.
Well, how much could they be worth? Like 1,000 each?
Well, there's 538 of them, and then you take, you divide, like, yeah, give each of them half a billion.
That should cover it.
A couple of years of service.
This is a much, much bigger problem that the patent law just doesn't cover. Like software and, you know, I mean, the patents for the ones that exist if I slide my finger across my phone to unlock it, like, that should be really given a patent. I mean, come on. It's there are thousands of these things that exist for just the most esoteric little things on a mobile device, and I don't think the patent office has any concept of what the hell's going on right now.
Can we patent walking, by the way?
I'm sure somebody's trying.
Remember someone patented toast?
Did they?
Really?
Yeah, a couple years ago.
A couple years ago?
Yeah.
Does that mean I have to send them?
What patent examiner would look at a patent application for toast and approve it?
Well, you know what they do is they just look to see if it's there already. And if
nobody's
isn't.
Done toast before, why? This is brilliant.
I have a patent.
No.
Yeah, I do.
What's your patent?
My patent
So you're part of the problem.
I'm part of the problem.
Yeah.
Nick Bilson of the New York Times.
We knew that already. But.
Come on now.
Thanks, guys. I have a patent for if you have an RFID on your phone and an RFID on your computer that when they connect that they can communicate with each other. And send information.
Now, did you, to do this patent, just merely have a concept and patent it, or did you have a prototype?
Built a prototype.
See, that's what it used to be. You'd have to build something and show the process at work, and that is a much better way, I think, of making patents work.
Yeah. Yeah, we did it with the New York Times. So we built
as an experiment?
Well, I used to work in the research labs, we prototyped all this stuff, and so we had this idea of content following you around. So, like, let's say you're reading an article on your laptop, and you don't finish it, and you pick up your phone and walk away. The RFID chip would say, "Hey, you left." Send him the rest of the article on his phone.
By the way, that is one thing that Motorola did have not only patents in, but also products is NFC, near field communications. Oh, yeah. So, and that's something Google's very interested in promoting. Yeah. So that might be some value. Set-top boxes also. They make they're one of two big set-top box companies. Paul and I talked about this on Windows Weekly.
We love Motorola. Love them.
Terrible. This stuff is crap.
Oh, sorry.
Only made worse by Scientific Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
I mean, these
the bar
both,
is very
it's
low.
A subtle
the
bar mistake. Is
low.
Yeah.
Very low.
Yeah. There doesn't seem like any way that they could put Google TV into these boxes.
What's Google TV?
$300 later, he explained.
I mean, I think the problem is that when it comes to set-top boxes, it's not a consumer device.
Thank
you. Know, the people that are buying these are the cable companies.
Companies. Buy
them. Yeah. And so the cable, if you're doing something the cable companies don't like, if you put some software on that they're not happy about, they're just going to not buy them.
Google TV.
Yeah. They'll kill you.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
the last thing they want is for Google TV to get in between them and their relationship with their advertisers.
Yeah. God, that's the first thing we want, of course, but it's the last thing they want.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hmm. Once again, size time.
I think swords.
Swords. Razors.
Razors. That's what I thought he was talking about.
Swords and razors.
A weapon.
There we go.
As a weapon. Use your razor as a weapon. Anything else to say about Motorugel?
Motorugel?
I like
Is that
that
the name that we've decided on?
I think that dramatically overstates the Motorola.
Google Rola. Sounds like a roller rink.
Google Rola.
I'm sorry, when you add Google and Motorola, what comes out on the
Google
other side
Rola
is Google.
Sounds like a late-night TV hostess for horror movies.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Google Rola.
That is so specific.
I live in a rich fantasy world. That's Google all I'm going to say about that right now. Google Rola. See, that's
that Gugurella sounds like a band.
A Japanese monster movie.
Yeah.
So do they rename the razor the Grazer?
Ooh.
And that's the step too far. That's, everybody was okay.
The Gutac.
Jeez.
Oh, God. All right, we're just going to stop with this. D8 happened this week. Actually, D9.
One more.
That's the All Things Digital Conference. We asked Kara to come in, Kara Swisher to come in. I think she was very busy. We'll get her on a future show. But they did a great job, a great panel, including Google's Eric Schmidt.
The Schmidt,
who was very presidential.
He was so mellow compared to his other wonky appearances where he said at least one complete wanger of a statement. But he was controlled.
The scuttlebutt is he wants to run for prez.
Oh,
you know, he didn't get the commerce job. That would have been a stepping stone, you know, at least some service. Here's Kara Swisher just asked him, what did he do wrong as CEO of Google?
Well, when we talk about the identity discussion we have about Facebook, when I went back and looked 4 years ago, I wrote memos which talked in general terms about this. I did nothing about the memos I wrote. 3 years ago, I wrote memos that talked about this general problem.
What's the problem he's talking about?
The identity problem online, that people don't have a way to create a personal identity and that Facebook has done that.
Yeah.
By basically giving people...
Stealing a march on Google.
Right.
So I would say that's probably the thing that I clearly knew that I had to do something, and I failed to do it.
And why was that?
I think I was busy.
But didn't you go?
At least he didn't say I was drunk, because that's what I always say.
That's one thing. He basically owned up to the fact that he calls it the identity problem. And he says, and I'm quoting here, Facebook, it's the first generally available way of disambiguating identity on the internet.
Okay. So and Twitter has that too. So you're at Becky Worley. You're the only one and only at Becky Worley.
B Worley.
Or B Worley.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's important.
Yeah.
B-W-O-R-L-E-Y. You're John, you're the real Dvorak.
Yeah.
I'm at Leo Laporte. So Twitter has that.
Right.
Facebook kind of, but not really has it because...
I have a fake John Dvorak on Facebook.
What is that? Facebook.com/fake John Dvorak?
No, it's just John. It says me. It said claims to be me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's a Leo Laporte. That's part of the problem is that there are many people with... the same name. I mean, Dvorak maybe is not so common. Well, actually.
Yeah, but no, this claims to be me.
Right. Well, hey, look, this is even worse. Here's John Laporte. So that's kind of. And he
that
looks
is
just
kind of a mashup.
Looks like our love child. No, I'm sorry. I searched for the wrong name. So I should search for John Dvorak.
Yeah, but I mean.
No, and this is which one is you? Is that you, John?
I never use Facebook. There it is.
That's not
the
you,
John Dvorak. No, I don't have a Facebook account. How could it be me?
Oh, that's interesting. I'm going to like it anyway.
But see, the point is that...
You there's a bunch like of people you, that complain. I put you on there. You don't have an account. No, that's not me.
Sure. He's just making this up to get people to like it.
But that's why I don't think Facebook has won this one. For instance, if I type facebook.com/LeoLaporte, it's not me.
But this is one of those places where we may or may not be... Our situation may not be germane to the average Joe, because for the average Joe, creating an identity online is not an identity for a public face. It's an identity in their community.
Yeah, but I think eventually, don't you want to have a unique identifier on the net? It may not be John Smith if your name is John Smith. It might be something else. But don't you – I mean, chat handles, for instance, are kind of, you know, considered unique. It's kind of bad form to copy somebody's chat handle. Don't you think ultimately, just as we have a unique phone number, we'll want some sort of unique identity on the net? I think that was the fear, is that Facebook was going to steal this, or Twitter was going to steal this, and Google – that's why they created Google Profiles. They kind of – but they don't have a competitor. They don't have a competitive product.
That hasn't gone anywhere.
No. I thought it might.
I don't think there's anything unifying or ubiquitous that's made any kind of a play for this except Facebook.
Yeah.
And Google did have an opportunity, and they blew it. And that was what Schmidt was owning up to, is that they had the opportunity.
I think he's overstating the case. I don't think
I agree with you, Leo.
I don't think they actually had
the opportunity. They didn't blow anything. They couldn't do it.
And that was Mossberg's follow-up. He said, well, you tried. It wasn't that you were busy. It was that you failed.
Yeah. It wasn't that I was busy. I sucked.
Yeah. And good for Walt for following up that
way. I think
he's
right.
Yeah.
I don't think they missed a... And you know what? 3 years ago, did you think of Google as a source of identity or a search engine? They're a search engine. They still are a search engine.
He also talked a lot about this gang of four.
Well, that was interesting because he left out Microsoft. And I think there are a lot of people in Redmond who are upset. He said the people that power technology today are Apple, Google, Facebook, and Amazon.
Yep. And
would you disagree?
No, I think his point was they are the four broadest consumer brands that have gone to a global level.
Right.
And while Microsoft may be a very powerful tech brand, they have lost their cachet as a consumer brand.
Well, he did admit they're a good enterprise brand. He just said they're not a consumer. You agree, John?
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Yeah. I think, in fact, it scares me a little bit. If you look at how successful, particularly Facebook and Amazon are, it's a little scary. I don't want them to be this successful.
Two more things he said. Use a Mac for security.
Yeah.
If you care about security,
apparently
use a Mac.
Apparently was wrong on that one. But
yeah. Those days are over.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding.
You buy in that? I mean, don't you guys remember Mac.Simpsons.do? Remember that virus way back then?
The first viruses I ever experienced were Mac viruses, but that was OS 9. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the point. Is like, so we've seen some malware, but does that mean that the party's over?
I think the party's over. And you know why I think it's a numbers, in my opinion, it's a numbers game. There was a good article on the unofficial Apple weblog. I can't remember the guy's name. But he said it's purely a numbers game because Apple has now gotten to the point where they're about 17% market share of all computers. Because so many Windows users have become so security conscious, it's about 80% of Windows users are protected by antiviruses. So the 20% of Windows users that are unprotected, 17% Mac users unaffected, it's about the same number. In other words, the Macintosh platform represents a good opportunity now.
Yeah, and it's easy pickings.
And it is, because these people are, and I include myself, completely unsecurity conscious.
Yeah, living in a fantasy land. Also, I think that it's a self-selecting more affluent community because the computers are more expensive.
Think about that. If you can hit the Mac people, don't you want to? Although I keep saying, and I keep waiting for the real gold is in the cell phone and iPhone. The minute you can figure out a way to get on somebody's iPhone, you've made it.
Golden.
Everything's on it. You know, was it you, John, who was telling me that there's a market in New York City for taxi cabs for lost phones? The taxi drivers know exactly where to go to sell. You drive up and the guy in the corner give you $100 and they give you more money if you've popped the battery. And so what they're not looking for the phone, they're looking for the data on the phone. So if you've popped the battery, the person who lost the phone can't erase it or deactivate it. So now the bad guy has the phone and it's loaded with personal information, contact lists, all sorts of stuff, credit card numbers. So there is already a market for the hardware. I think it's just a matter of time before people start hacking the cell phones.
One last thing on Schmidt and then I'll shut up about Schmidt.
No, I like Schmidt.
When pressed on which was the third mobile OS, obviously Android,
iPhone
iOS,
and Android,
he would not answer.
He doesn't want to say Windows, and he doesn't want to say BlackBerry.
Yeah. Maybe he doesn't know.
He doesn't want to say pre or yeah, whatever
Web
it is.
OS or,
Web OS.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was interesting to me. He was so cagey.
You don't think HP can pull it off?
No.
And they said, who was it from HP who said that they would license Web OS? Did you hear
that? Did Apotheker say they'd license Web OS?
Yeah, to HTC. It was a hypothetical question from Josh Topolsky, but I thought that was...
That is interesting.
Yeah, and he didn't want... It was sort of an SE grin when he said it, but, you know, it was... He said it.
I think if Microsoft does end up buying Nokia, and apparently that's been something that's been around for a while, it's always been an option for Microsoft, if they end up buying Nokia... And with the way Nokia's stock price is tumbling and their trouble that Nokia's been having, I think this could very well happen. Then that's a pretty credible third platform. You kind of you forget WebOS. You probably can forget BlackBerry, too. I mean, there's still BlackBerry adherents out there.
No, they can't do both. It's going to cost them $20 billion for any for either Black. They're both about the same price right now. $20 billion for either RIM or Nokia. They cannot afford a $40 billion deal.
Who would you buy? Which would you buy? If you can't
Nokia.
Buy both, you'd buy Nokia.
Yeah.
Because not so much for the U.S., but you buy them for international.
Yeah, and you buy them because you need a hardware play, obviously. But now, if you want to buy them for like kind of changing direction again, because there's still people addicted to the RIM BlackBerry. I mean, I still see people say to me, I have to use this.
You know where they use it a lot now? In high schools. You wouldn't think kids would use it, but kids love BlackBerry Messenger. I see lots of kids. Yeah. Typing away on their BlackBerries.
It's less expensive. It's the next step from the Sidekick. Basically, when Sidekick has started to go away,
interesting.
BlackBerry is the next thing. And I also think this is a West Coast bias.
And who
on our
ruined
part,
Sidekick, saying, by the way? Who killed that?
Yeah,
Microsoft.
Mm-hmm. By the way, if your data was on Sidekick servers, they turned it off this week. So
I know.
Say goodbye.
I know.
And then, of course, there's the Microsoft kin.
Well.
There's always that.
That's really cool.
I'm so depressed. I've been reading the Steve Jobs book. I'm listening to death.
School has been
so what
made
we
obsolete.
Got next? We're post three.
All right, let's go.
And now there's floods in Thailand.
Let's talk about Thailand.
Thailand is up.
No, we should actually really call it Thailand because it's a very serious.
So let's go, Nick.
So
have you seen the pictures? I mean, it's devastating what's going on.
Well, there's
is this because they're not properly planning for these floods?
Absolutely.
They're overbuilding
absolutely.
The urban areas?
Yeah, and they're overbuilding the factories and, yeah. I mean, everything. They're not planning. There's no planning.
You look at Bangkok and it's just scary.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that's happening is that there's been this flooding, and as a result, thousands of factories have been shut down.
Mostly hard drives, right?
Well, a lot of hard drives, but it's not necessarily just the hard drives. It's little springs and things like that from hard drives that are built around the world.
Parts,
so even parts that are being built in China cannot be put together. So
it's affecting tons of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's people that are dying. There's people that don't have jobs. There's people that can't support their families. There's all of these different things that are happening.
And environmental devastation.
And environmental devastation. As Nick wrote, it's also about the cloud.
So one of the things I didn't realize when I started reporting the story was I was looking at it from the consumer standpoint. Yeah. So the next two quarters, they're going to be making about 30 to 35% less of hard drives, which is about 50 million less per quarter, which is going to have huge effects on consumers, right?
Yeah,
so you go to buy a hard drive, your computer is going to be more expensive, so on and so forth.
We're already seeing price gouging.
Yes.
People have, you know, even though there's no shortage yet, people are already raising
building
the price.
The
but the bigger problem is the massive drives for Oracle, Facebook, Google, Apple, all of these companies
that
require cloud computing.
Yeah.
So Apple, for example, which is now expanding iCloud and has Siri and all these things, is going to need to continue to expand its drives as
the
internet grows.
So they use the same consumer hard drives?
No, they use different drives, but they're all made there.
Same
and in China, where the other drives are made, they're at 98% capacity. So there's literally nothing that anyone can do.
Yeah.
And so there's two problems that are going to happen. Is one, they're not going to have enough drives to expand the internet. But the other problem is that the drives that exist, they're going to have to take engineering resources. Facebook, for example, will have to do this and figure out ways to get the most out of the drives that are there so they won't be innovating as quickly and as much.
Haven't we heard this story before? I mean, in the tsunami in Japan, we were very worried there would be big shortages. I remember RAM, you know, the RAM factories burning down and everybody was concerned there'd be shortages. There was price gouging. But in the long run, there was some resiliency. You think there's no resiliency?
In the long run, but in the short term.
Even in the short term, I mean...
When you, when you,
when things, you know, when you are decentralizing production like this, you know, there are obviously trade-offs, and a big one is, sure, you're not, it's not all in the same place, but it's not all in the same place. So this is, this does have an, this will have an impact. Nick is right. I mean, this will have an impact in all, at all levels of in technology that are, you know, where these factories are coming into play.
When you're, you're changing the assumptions of a business model and a an innovation model that took, you know, something that was scarce, storage,
right,
and then made it plentiful. An abundance of storage changed how we built
$50 for a 2 terabyte drive, for crying out loud.
Yeah. So you look at the scaled up services that Nick is talking about that's built into how your Gmail storage just grows and grows and no thought of it. And what's the engineering behind that that has assumed zero cost storage effectively?
Could there be an unintended consequence that maybe they figure out ways to be more efficient as a result of this?
Yes, but it's they haven't been efficient. I mean, I remember when I in the late 90s when I was working as a web startups, and one of my jobs was to figure out how to make a web page less than 100K, and it was taking photos and optimizing them and all of these different things and
trying to limit good thing. No, that was a good thing.
And we've gotten really lazy with being economical when it comes
low
to data.
Prices make you lazy in every part of the economy.
Right.
And
right?
Also, you know,
think about food, think about our use of oil. Think about any
that's true. It's like a five world economy, you know, the five world economy, right? I mean, we're treating things like they're just infinite, right? There's an infinite amount of hard drives that are going to be super cheap forever.
Correct.
So we don't have to worry about, you know, optimizing our data. And we really, that, you know, that speaks to the cellular problem too. I mean, we have this massive network congestion now. You see AT&T is off, you know, the service is awful a lot of the time. And the reason is because we are pushing far more bandwidth than we really have. I mean, we're pushing into far more bandwidth than we have.
When I was in Ireland, I left my phone on accidentally. And I barely checked my email. And just even the background things that were happening, like, you know, sites checking, GPS and things like that, was like megabytes and megabytes after like a day. So,
you can
that's
expense
happening
that, right?
In the background all the time.
Did you get have you got your bill yet?
I had a phone call with AT&T and I said, look, come on, guys, give me a break.
Yeah.
I don't want to pay
Nick
you $60,000. No,
have
I
you
can't,
ever heard
I
of the
can't
New York
do
Times?
That. I can't do that. I can't control that. Well,
I know David Polk. That works.
Yeah, that
I
works. And then they hang up on you.
We're going to double these charges.
It's weird because we're assumed that our economy is one of abundance because we're in an information age.
Yeah.
We don't have these constraints
of
physical goods.
Natural
but that age
resources
still
are limited.
Depends on metals, water, petroleum products, and manufactured goods that are susceptible to natural disasters, which are still events that we fall victim to, both on a human scale.
And this speaks to a larger issue with the way these things are produced. I mean, there is no connection here between the, you know, and really anywhere in developed countries where the things that you buy, there's a connection of understanding where those things come from and how they're made and what the cost is, what the human cost is, what the you know, monetary cost is. And I think that as technology culture becomes regular culture, we're going to start to see things that we don't like to see. And I feel like we need to address them at some point. We're already starting to see them and start to address them a little bit, but en masse, we're not really doing it. And I think eventually we're going to have to take a look at how these factories are run, where they're run, why they're run the way that they're run, and, you know, start thinking.
I want to get really depressed. Have you seen the slavery footprint project?
No.
How many slaves work for you? So there's, but by slaves, I mean people who are essentially working for free or are in bondage and servitude some way. There are, they estimate, 27 million of them in the United States. If you go to this website, which is slaveryfootprint.org, and there's an iPhone app as well, you can calculate it. It's a very depressing
But it's an iPhone app, which is built on a product that uses precious metals.
Just owning an iPhone is not
a what is the game? You know, what's the name of the game that was banned from the App Store? That was basically, it was a game where you played as the children who were mining the materials that were used to make silicon.
And the last thing Apple wants you to know is that, of course.
This is something, Joshua, I mean, this is something that I think that we kind of overlook as journalists, too, is you know, look at this shiny new iPhone 4S. Mm-hmm. But thinking about the things that went into this and the people and everything, it's something that Apple has managed to put behind this magical guard. So we don't know how the magic trick is put together. And really, it's not necessarily...
Well, most companies have, everybody has, but, you know, it's completely, you don't see it. And, you know, I did a panel a few years ago and I moderated the panel and it was about recycling. And we were talking about, there's a rep, I think, from Panasonic there. And I was talking about the fact that new TVs come out every few months with just the most incremental minor changes. You know, And there's, you know, there's evolution of technology and innovation. And then there's just, you're just pushing it out because you need a new product on the shelves. And I think that at some point in the near future, and look, I mean, this is our business. We report on this stuff. So it's kind of, you know, there's a give and a take for me to think about and to talk about it. But the truth is we're confronted with it all the time. This is a great example. And we see it more and more now as we get exposed to how this stuff is really made and who's making it. At some point, we're going to have to start to think about the global impact of this, or I think we're going to be in trouble.
Well, we're not. I mean, if it's, it goes far beyond the cell phone. It goes to, look at auto.
Yep. Right?
We just made cars. We're just starting to slow that down a little bit. And this is where you reach the limits of our version of capitalism. Because mm-hmm. real capitalism would take into account all the costs.
Correct.
And so that the market would assume all that information, absorb it, and reflect it in the price. And the fact is, we don't.
Yep.
Our oil right. is still too cheap. I mean, our water is too cheap relative to how much it actually costs to get this stuff done. So this is just the major side effect of an industrialized society where things are relatively easy day to day.
Yeah. It's, I mean, like even a $64 like tomato.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, even something like subsidizing a phone. I mean, you know, if everybody had to pay $600 for the phone, with the actual cost of the phone, well, first would all, it change our buying habits?
Put a case on
it. I think it would change our buying habits a lot, you know, and I'm not sure that would not be a good thing. I mean, I'm fine with paying. Well, I mean, maybe I can say this because I'm in a different position than a lot of people, but I don't expect things that are nice and work well to be necessarily cheap, right? I think that's a real illusion that
this is why Brian Lamb quit Gizmodo, essentially. You know, he said that he was pushing this kind of consumerism. You need to buy another TV next week and another TV.
No,
another
I understand. TV. I feel the same. I often wonder. I question that myself all the time. And you know, I wonder if somebody were risky enough to say, "I'm going to make stuff in the United States. I'm going to charge what it's really costing to make this.
Make it so it lasts.
So that it lasts." would people who have been buying cheap Chinese gadgets all their lives, would they buy this stuff? Would they spend more to buy this kind of to support our economy?
I mean, we shop at farmers markets sometimes, right? Yeah. Some people.
I think
do,
we would. I think we would. I'd like to see somebody think out of the box that way. To be honest,
I agree that it is. You know, there is some element of that where you know every day are we pushing this stuff? But look, there is a community that's really interested in it, really wants it. But our habits will change, and they already have changed. You know, our phone buying habits have changed, and now they're accelerated, but that's going to change in the future too. I mean, as we, you know, we'll reach a point where, you know, you're not buying a new computer every year or every 2 years. And I think that we'll start to see that with phones as well. But at some point, the whole industry is moving towards six-month purchase cycles. Right now, we're in the midst of insane innovation. I don't think that that's going to continue.
It's going to get worse. Every indicator is it's going to get worse, not better.
No, it is going to get worse.
The only thing that'll stop it is an economic collapse, but we are headed straight towards that. What's the chat
room saying? The only thing that'll stop 6 month phone
is economic collapse.
Absolutely. No, I think that at some point we're going to start to level out. I mean, we're just at a point that things are spiking.
There's no history of that.
That's actually really funny. Big Ginge wrote, Victorian lawnmowers are still working.
Exactly.
Which is true.
Yeah.
My first generation. Works. I have a first generation iPod and iPhone. They wouldn't work if I had an engineering degree. Yeah. I mean, those things they're
but
designed
a knife
to last.
Can still cut things.
Yeah,
you know, it's one of the reasons that I always was resistant to covering gadgets and really always wanted to talk about promoting technology as a democratizer, as a tool, as something that you could continue to use to change the world. And it's something I think we always have to keep in mind is that this is not sustainable, this kind of growth. And yet, I don't think it's going to slow down unless we're forced to slow it down.
No, the system itself has to
The system
to slow
will
down.
Collapse.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you also have to find, you have to make a decision about what's real innovation and what's phony innovation, right? I think that we have to start looking hard at what is, I mean, you know, there's going to be a period where we don't look at it. But at some point, you're going to have to say, is the Droid Razor any better than the Droid Bionic, which came out 3 months ago? And the truth is, they're almost the exact same phone.
Well,
except one is thinner.
iPhone 4S
right?
and iPhone 4, let's be realistic. It's a little
right.
faster.
No, I mean, but you know. I think at some point there will be a leveling out of some of this. And there's also going to be a reevaluation of what we accept as innovation. I mean, right now there's a race going. There's a huge race for who is going to control this mobile space, right? And I don't think it's been completely decided yet. And at some point, it's going to level out. It's going to get decided. I mean, it's like PCs. At some point,
I don't know.
Remember the Amiga?
Well, it's no, it's. I mean, it's absolutely going to get decided. Not only if you want to go back.
There may be two winners or three winners, though, not five winners. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Yeah, and, right. But if you want to go back even further, go back to the typewriter. When the typewriters first came out, there were 30 different styles of keyboards. Right. In the end, we have QWERTY, even though it is not.
It's horrible.
It's horrible, completely. But there were literally 30 different types of keyboards on the market, and there was all these different races and so on.
If innovation continues on the web and in software where it is uses resources but fewer resources, is that where innovation will head in an economic meltdown?
Well, I think we reward things in a system based on the cost we acknowledge. Once, if you look at this hard drive store, which is where this started in Thailand, we will reward efficiency again.
Right.
Because the cost will demand it.
We'll have to.
So society-wide, you look at the cars that are selling now. I mean, look at the price of rental cars over the past decade. SUVs are ridiculously cheap because nobody wants them
because you can't afford
them.
The
Prius is hard to rent. The little smart car is hard to rent because the consumer mindset has shifted because the cost is more acknowledged.
There are those who say
the SUV is a great example of this kind of blindness of the industries and of the consumer to something that is so obviously unnecessary, right? And now we're seeing the backlash to that, which is in the leveling out of people, the desire for an SUV.
I love what you said, Nick, though, that we are setting ourselves up for failure because we are designing things that are obsolete in a year or two or three.
Well, absolutely.
Well, we're going to, I mean, here's a fun exercise. Like, what will our grandchildren say? It'll be WTF.
Yeah.
Or
what were they thinking?
Were you thinking?
Yes.
You thought you could just burn things?
Yeah. You're
crazy.
They're here.
You had
five phones in four years. If they're here, Joshua, you're dark.
Well, I'm just saying, things are rough.
You know, we have a book, thank God, that says, I live in the future.
We're still here.
Let's ask the guy. He's from the future, Nick Bilton.
Thank you. Thank you. I took my time machine in this morning.
You know, this is important from a technical point of view because of the cutting off of the internet. I mean, of course, it's a big political story, but I think from a technical point of view, it's interesting, especially since Joe Lieberman of Connecticut and Susan Collins from Florida proposed this.
Collins is from New England, I believe.
Yeah, proposed this. Yeah, you might be right. Proposed this internet kill switch.
Yeah, S3480.
Now, it was last Congress, but they say they're going to bring
it's
it back in this Congress.
Around,
is it?
Yeah.
And it really, she's from Maine, that's right. And it really does, this is a very dramatic example of why such legislation might be a really bad idea.
Well, it's a bad idea from the get-go, but it's funny to watch the chat room go on and on about, it's not possible. The fact of the matter is, with this government and the kind of rules they've got in play when it comes to...
It's a lot easier if you're totalitarian.
Well, but at the same time, let's put it this way. They put out the word. And by the way, there's a lot of black boxes on a lot of these major ISPs nowadays, especially like AT&T's got one over in San Francisco at that CIA headquarters and that crazy building on 2nd Street. Anyway, say you're a CEO of one of the big companies and you have like a, you know, somebody calls you from Homeland Security and says, shut down your...
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? No, and then end up in Gitmo? They throw you in jail.
But this internet kill switch would, I presume, effectively put a kill switch in each of these places, and you wouldn't have to ask. You'd just say.
There'd be a box on the network, and they just
push the button.
And they would go to these boxes, and it was essentially just, shut down the machines.
I'm pretty hard-pressed to think of a compelling security reason why you would want
to
do that.
They're talking about that. It's interesting that they bring it up right now, of course. Like, what horrible timing. Why would they bring this up? It's such a bad... It's like the worst possible time.
Yeah. You and Mubarak together at last. Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, they're talking about how, the details of this that they would use it for, things like if there was, some kind of terrorist incident and they needed to shut down, like people were attacking the thing that keeps the Hoover Dam, up and running and stuff. They would need to shut down the network.
They definitely don't want Leo Laporte on Comcast if somebody's attacking the Hoover Dam because, boy, that could be trouble.
Well, I agree with that theory, by the way. There could be some massive
worm coming in, a Stuxnet kind of something
ruining the country, and they had to reboot everything.
Well, I think an internet reboot switch is a great idea.
This is the oldest excuse in the world, that there's going to be some terrorist attack, so we have to shut down this, shut down that, break into people's homes to steal information. This has been going on since the beginning of time. And as much as I am concerned about terrorism, I would rather we put our energy into shoring up the Hoover Dam So it's extremely difficult to make it happen.
Yeah, there you
than,
go.
Than shutting down the entire net. And,
better to be safe than sorry, Larry. Better to be safe than sorry.
Gee, we're trying to disrupt American business. Let's just shut down the internet. Who's going to win that battle?
Yeah.
The Ars Technical article on this was pretty good, though. You know, all the technical details of how potentially they actually did this in Egypt, you know, going into all the nuts and bolts of it. But, you know, they bring up the point at the end that how much more difficult it would be actually to do this in the United States simply because it's such a bigger country, you know, space-wise.
We're not as centralized.
Right. Everything in, like, European countries and in Egypt, too, is run through the capital city for the internet, it sounds like, whereas in the United States, it's, you know, all the different wires coming in from overseas that they have a bunch of different hubs that would have to basically do this all two at once, and it would take a lot more effort.
I remember when I was in Egypt, I believe that they said that there is basically one undersea cable going from the Mediterranean to Alexandria that connects the entire country. So it isn't so difficult, and it's nowhere near the complexity it would be in the U.S.
You know, the interesting thing is when the internet was first created, the reason they did this distributed processing was to avoid. We were worried about the Soviets, right, cutting out our communication. The whole concept of the internet is to avoid the ability for one country to basically cut it. Yet, obviously, it can be done within that country. We saw that this week.
That architecture's long gone.
It's a lot more centralized than it used to be. There are only a few backbones. There's a few interconnects. I don't know. I mean, this is a great article. You're right, MG. A really good article in the Law and Disorder column of Ars Technica, speaking about how they do this. I don't think it's quite as easy here. However, doesn't mean people aren't going to debate the need for a kill switch. It just seems like a terrible idea. Larry, you said that people are finding ways to get online. You actually have an article on Larry's World. Mm-hmm. About this.
Yeah, sure. I mean, first of all, I don't even know if I own a dial-up modem. I'll have to go look in my closet. There's probably one
somewhere.
I
know John has one, but I have
I have a boxed one. Hayes autograph.
Yeah, Hayes autographed modem. Okay.
I think I'm going to dust it off if I can find it, because that's certainly one way. They dialed into overseas ISPs.
It's one way, Larry, but to be honest about it, I wonder if I could hook the thing up and actually remember how to use it.
Well, part of it is you can use you're able to use a cell phone too to be able to do it, right? There's a way that
if
people
the cell phone networks worked, you could, and they do, of course, now. And where I'm seeing tweets as we speak from people on the ground in Egypt that are out there again tweeting through their cell phones.
By the way, why Edward R. Murrow would never have succeeded in journalism today, because I can't see him saying, "I'm seeing tweets as we speak, coming in from all over the world."
That's what they're doing on these networks. The CNN and all the rest of them just show tweets. Hey, tweets. I can go to the computer and look at tweets on my own time.
CBS this morning, they had a big tweet deck, and they showed all the different feeds coming in. It was very impressive, of course. But, if people are tweeting them from the ground, there's one blogger. Let me see if I can get his name. Whale Abbas. He's WAELABBAS, and he's blogging from the ground, sending pictures, and he was dark for a while, but he's back up. So there are people doing it, and even during the time when it was supposedly banned completely, people were doing it. So, as I said, you somehow get through. Also, ham radio connections.
Yes, ham radio is going to be the saving grace of the whole thing.
GPRS, baby.
Yep. Point to point. Central server.
I just think it's really interesting that information has become like water. It just will flow. It will find the cracks and it will come out.
You know, that has to be done, by the way, and there's a bunch of hams that apparently listen to this podcast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Is that there are basically throttle internet connectivity through the ham frequencies, and I think that needs to change.
You mean they should be have faster bandwidth?
It's very slow right now.
It's like ridiculous.
But it's better than not. I mean, look, you know, we're spoiled, but you know, nobody's if there's a revolution, we won't be trying to watch Netflix. That's not really the issue here. You know, it's probably sufficient to send email.
And hams have been great in every disaster, and it's clear because you can't create a barrier to a ham operator. Well, you can try to jam their frequencies. But it's point to point. It's not going through a server.
Kids, learn Morse code. That's all I can say.
You don't need that anymore for a license.
I know.
No, you don't, but it's still handy.
Thank you for correcting me, because it's still hammy?
Still handy.
Thank you for correcting me, because, frankly, I was going to get the email. So I never, you never want to mess with a ham.
Anything else to talk about with this Egyptian story? Or should we move on? I think it's a fascinating story.
I think it's overcovered. I think we should let it shake out a week, and when you get back from Antarctica, we can talk about it more.
You love this, and I'm going to Antarctica, don't you?
Yeah,
I think it's fascinating that this is on our beat. I mean, those of us who are tech journalists. Finally, we get to say
something. Finally, something to talk about other than Zuckerberg's sweatshirt.
Although I have to say, the President of State of the Union was also on our beat. He actually gave a talk that dealt with technology issues.
Yeah, and he YouTubed his. I thought that was really interesting for the second year in a row.
He did a shout out to Facebook and Google, and he talked a lot about his fantasy that we're going to get 98% high speed wireless internet access. Within 5 years, good luck.
Fantasy.
But he certainly painted a very optimistic picture of technology, and ironically, it was just right on the verge of what's happening in Egypt.
Who is Chameleonaire? MGC.
I have to say, I'm like, why does he keep coming
up? I would say this on the car ride up here.
I think he's topiary, actually.
At tech conferences. He's been like on panels.
It's a great name. I don't know what it means.
I asked MG, why do we keep talking about Chameleonaire? I don't know one of his songs. And MG says, because he goes to every conference. I said, why does he go to every tech conference?
You don't know all the words to Ride and Dirty?
No, I don't.
Oh, he's the Ride and Dirty guy?
I thought he was the backup on
this. This is why Spotify was invented.
I only know the. The Weird Al version, White and Nerdy.
White and Nerdy.
I didn't even know that was a Chameleonaire spoof.
Apparently.
That's the only one I know.
So he's maybe so not I know the main that guy
song.
In that one.
I know that song. Is that his famous song?
I think he won a Grammy for it.
Well, there you go.
I don't know for that or for that.
He's not on Spotify.
I don't know what the kids are listening to.
Oh, no. Loading. It's loading. Spotify's still loading.
Is he going to also win a Crunchy for best hip hop star in the tech community? He does. He's on his way.
He says, I've used Android devices and they suck.
Okay. So he was at. So he came to.
Was it Disrupt?
No, it was our the smaller mobile Crunch Up event thing on Friday down in Palo Alto at the AOL offices actually, and he got up at the very end of the conference. You got the. Song.
I got it.
Okay,
you can pump it up in the house, and we're gonna have a dance party right after MG explains who.
And so he got up, and like I was saying earlier, we had Mateus Duarte from Android up there, and Chameleonaire asked him just right to his face, just. Said basically, I've tried to use so many Android devices out there, and they all suck.
So this guy's like you guys.
Yeah.
What's Chameleonaire's birth name? Do we know?
It's on his Crunchbase profile. Okay.
He has a Crunchbase profile.
It's just funny when we. Yeah. And then Chameleonaire asked, "This is Riding Dirty."
All right, everybody, let's go. Is this going to get filthy in a minute?
I don't know. I've never heard this.
This is from Everybody Wants a Thug, ladies and gentlemen. Chameleonaire.
They see me rolling. They hate me.
Patrolling and trying to catch me riding. I don't think I should explain the context behind this song, like what it's about, but you might be able to use your imagination.
I thought it was just when you need a new exhaust pipe or something. You're right. Riding dirty.
Maybe you didn't use mobile oil.
Yeah.
You didn't get your smog check.
No smog check.
Lowest
no smog check.
Unleaded option.
Traded in your Prius. He's riding dirty.
I am a bad dancer. I'm glad that's over.
So this is my favorite paragraph from MG Sigler's Chameleonaire pleads with Android design to lead to give him a decent device. My favorite, but Chameleonaire kept pressing. He wanted a single clear answer. Yeah. Which Android device should he use? This is the Duarte guy. This is the Sicilian.
Yeah, he basically told him, stay tuned. We're going to have some better devices coming out for you.
I'm hoping that
which has been
soon.
Their stock answer since which has always been the answer, yes.
We're
going
to
have
an Android phone that you are going to love, said Duarte.
Yeah.
It was a fun moment though.
In a brief moment of levity. And
why is Chameleonaire at your event?
He actually does really like technology,
and so he goes. Who doesn't like technology? He has an app or something.
He has like some startup investments or something that he was doing. But he gets up there and he's been on stage before at Disrupt, and he is very knowledgeable about that. And he asks the best questions usually because it's like instead of all of us thinking amongst each other and we're all like speaking in circles, he thinks more like outside the box, yeah, like a regular
tech why is
user.
This no good?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, actually. Yeah.
It's kind of funny how anytime someone's more well-known for a song called Riding Dirty or for being a very successful actor or something like that, when they get really interested in technology, all the rest of us go, what are they doing here?
Right. I think it's less than that. I think we're just more, like, kind of confused. Like, yeah. Oh, I didn't.
Are you for real? You really care?
You sure?
Yeah, it happens.
By the way, when I searched
I wish
for...
more people were, like,
me too.
Interested in technology.
Did you
yeah.
try and search cool for Riding Dirty?
I, when I searched for Riding Dirty,
don't look at the images.
Weird Al's came up.
And, okay, okay.
Oh, the images?
Yeah, don't do that.
Should I go to Urban Dictionary and
yeah.
look it up?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, that might.
Just not up on the screen.
That's where I would always go when you kids.
Or blur the whole thing.
Nice.
It doesn't have quite the bass.
Yes, they do have the bass. What you need to do is stick with the beat. You're going real fast. No, they're all thinking I'm so wide and nerdy. Think I'm just too wide and nerdy. Think I'm just too wide and nerdy.
We should get the audience shot where no one is moving.
They're just sitting still. They're like, what
this
the
is
hell?
Dead out there.
I was told this would be The Price is Right. Where's Bob Barker?
I still don't know what chameleon, what the lyrics of that song are. Probably just as well. Let's take a break. When we come back, the biggest event of the year for me at TWiT was our move, and we have some video from that. But before we do that, I'd like to tell you about one of my favorite sponsors on the show, a great company that we love dearly, Squarespace.com. Squarespace, the secret behind exceptional websites. We've had great fun all year long creating Squarespace sites on the fly. You know, if you go to Squarespace.com right now, you just click that button, and for 2 weeks, you have full access to all the Squarespace tools. All you need is a name of the site, a password, and an email address. No credit card, no payment or anything. And you could set up a site. So every week we'd set up sites on TWiT, and we had so much fun doing it. Some of those sites are still around. I wish I could remember the names, but some of the sites people have actually started paying for and have kept them around, which I think is hysterical. We've also tried to bring Squarespace sites down. You know, the TWiT army is amazing, and TWiT, our biggest show, has the largest live audience, and we have yet to bring a Squarespace site down. We can bring almost any site down just by saying, everybody now, right now, go to it. I'll give you an example. Do it right now. Go to inside.twit.tv. That's our Squarespace site, our Inside TWiT blog. And even if you all go there right now, you will not be able to bring that site down. I have absolute confidence. Because Squarespace uses a very sophisticated virtual networking system. You know, most of the time Squarespace is, I should explain, it's hosting plus software. So it's really good hosting. And most of the time when you go to a website, it's coming off of one computer, or in best case scenario, as when you go to our site, we've got, I think, four servers, and they're load balanced across all four servers. It's still not so hard to overload it because, it's not typical that somebody's going to pay enough money to be able to handle the maximum amount of traffic that site's going to see. Squarespace doesn't do it that way. They use virtual server technology. It's very sophisticated. And they can throw anywhere from 1 to 1,000 servers or more on any given site as needed. So as traffic ramps up on your site, you're guaranteed you'll always have enough bandwidth. Your site will never go down. It's just one of the many reasons to go with Squarespace, the best possible hosting. And then you're getting this great content management system on top of it, a system that allows even a rank amateur to design a unique, great-looking, polished site that has full functionality, social media integration, e-commerce if you want, great looks and feel and speedy responsiveness. It's just an amazing service and very affordable. So here's the deal. Try it. Just go to squarespace.com and use the system. See how you like it. If you decide you want to buy, do use our offer code. That's TWIT01 for the first of the first month of the year. TWIT01. It'll be good all month. And you'll get, I think, is it 30% off a month for the first 3 months? Wow, that's a good deal. Squarespace.com. Try it free. If you sign up, and you have a variety of different plans you can sign up for, but this code applies to all of them, use the offer code TWIT01 for 30% off for the first 3 months. It's our way of saying thank you to Squarespace. And Squarespace's way of saying, please try us. Squarespace.com, the secret behind exceptional websites. Let's continue on. For me, I mean, it was a big year. There was so much great stuff that happened this year. Lots of fascinating tech news to talk about. Wonderful hosts joining us. We had so much fun. But really, the big part of 2011, I know you agree with me, probably, I hope, was the opening of our great new space, the Twit Brick House. We had a parade. We had our first episode of the new studio was a Twit episode with some of our favorite Twit co-hosts. Well, I'll tell you what, we've got the best of the brand new grand opening right here for you. Enjoy.
This is the last show for Twit, for the Twit show from the cottage. At this time next week, we'll be broadcasting live from the Brick House down the street, the brand new Twit Brick House Studios. I'm very excited about that. There is still time to get a brick on the wall of honor. We are selling bricks to help raise money for this incredibly expensive product. I will see you next week from the new Twit Brick House. This is the last time I will say it in the cottage. Another Twit is in the can. We got the camera in here. We're getting ready to stream that live. Brent Bye on the camera. In just a moment, we're gonna take a hike down the walk. Say goodbye to the old Twit Cottage. I've been here since 2004. 7 years in the Twit Cottage. It's been a great, really a great place to work, to do this show, and to build a company. Unfortunately, the company got a little too big for this little old cottage, 1,800 square feet, 18 employees. Do the math. Each of them has a 10 by 10 foot square for everything, including the bathroom. So it was time. We had to expand just a little bit. We're going to move down the road just a couple of blocks to a beautiful spot. It's called the Brick. We built it ourselves from scratch, the Brick House Studios. And I think you'll see it's just, well, it's a cathedral to tech broadcasting. And I'm very glad I get to hold high services there. So if you are listening at home, I thank you for joining me for the radio show. I invite you to visit the website, techguylabs.com, and I will come back next week. We'll talk some more. And if you'd like to watch our continued coverage of the move down the street, we have our live cameras in position, and we will have our little mini parade and our first show in about an hour. You can watch it all at live.twit.tv. For the last time, signing off from the Twit Cottage, I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Great work, Leo.
Oh, you know what I really want to do is shut the studio down. Yeah, but we always have done this nice tradition at the end of our broadcast day, not always, but for a long time in our studio, of turning out the lights. And I think for the last time, I should turn out the lights, don't you? And say goodbye to this lovely studio. So what we're going to do is we have this thing we do. Maybe some of you remember this. At the end of the broadcast day, I like to play this little song from our friend Jeff Smith, and I like to shut the studio down because I got to close the windows and everything. I got to close the light. I got to turn off the lights. I got to shut down the TV. So we're going to do that. And let me kick it off with Jeff Smith because he did this great recording for us, a special version of I'm a Twit.
I'm gonna get this. I'm gonna get this.
Can I carry something? Carry your pillow, your puppet.
Where is it coming from? All right, I'm gonna have to come over there. I'm gonna shut down. Excuse me, I need you to go get over there.
Yeah, it's okay.
So then you're gonna be able to switch over to live view in just a second. You should go out in the living room, Brent. You talk.
Good.
You're going to the living room. I'm gonna be with you.
bad. This sounds so bad. Oh, well, I didn't plan on that. So I'm going to switch to, I'm going to fade to black. Then you'll get the gear off, and you can switch to that. Let me go to the bathroom first. And then you have a mic for me?
Well, there's a few people out here, too. This is the parade that we were talking about for the last 6 months. Are you ready to go to the new cottage?
Yeah!
All right. Follow me, everybody. Wait a minute. We got to do a fanfare. Dick, you and me. Onward. So, and quite a few fans have come down. But now we have space for about 50 people in the new studio. So I think we have a sellout crowd. Eva arranged it all.
Okay, and we have an overflow room with a monitor?
No. They'll just be sitting at our feet.
Right. But you know what? Everybody here probably has iPods and iPads. They'll be streaming us no matter what.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody will be able to see what's going on. All right. There is a little bit of a line out front as people who arrange tickets to be there at the... Yeah, you can take the clock. That way I can pull up my pants. So we got a big crowd here, people. Look at this. Are you ready, everybody? You ready? Are we excited? Hey, everybody, we've walked down. Look at this. They've got Twit Brickhouse Gala Premier shirts. Isn't that great? Nice to see you. Thank you. So nice to see you. Thank you for coming. Hi, how are you? Great to see you. Thank you for coming. Oh, wow, it's a great group here. Hi, everybody. All right, now we've got to do the ribbon cutting. We've got to do the ribbon. Would you hold the microphone, Dick?
Yes. Oh, my. You do have the shears.
Well, you think we would not do the shears?
No. Oh.
Where's the camera?
Right there.
Are you ready? Okay. Yeah. Everybody, get your cameras in place. Uh-huh. All ready? No. Here we go. Say, let's do a countdown. Three, two, one. Yay! Come on in. I hope it's unlocked. Come on in, everybody. Get yourself a seat. Make yourself at home. We've got seats for here for everybody. You can let everybody in. Tom Merritt is over here. This is Tom's new headquarters. You're already in position. Look, we had to make a riser for you.
Yeah, it's the new chair is too high. We'll figure it out.
So this is where TNT is going to be from. This is their new...
Ayaz will be here, Sarah Lane will be right there, me here, and then we can actually slide these tables for guests.
And by the way, thank you. Great Comic-Con coverage. Did you have fun there?
Yeah, no, it was a blast. It's always fun to be at Comic-Con. And Dick was there and helped show us around on the floor.
So. He got an Inkpot Award. I was pretty impressed.
Yeah, crazy? Yeah.
Small group. So more pennies in the corner here. There's some pennies in the corner here. By the way, we festooned this place with old technology, Tom's IBM PS2. We've got a Woz Apple II. But look at this. This is a classic. And thanks to Mike and Gene Troiano and Roger Ambrose who mailed this to us. Dick, this is the last known piece of the Screensavers set. That rubber bolt was on the wall at the Screensavers set.
Oh, my word.
And since Roger designed the Screensavers set... and design this set, we thought it'd be kind of appropriate to have that under glass there.
Yeah, I don't. Gene and Mike are out there now.
They're here. They brought
a lot of stuff. They think this is.
They're taking pieces of this set.
This set, just in case.
Now I'm gonna walk over here and show you some more. All right, are we ready for the switch off?
Yeah.
All right. So, what we're gonna do is we're gonna, for the last time, stream from the cottage. We're gonna flip the switch. Streamosaurus will quietly die. I should actually let Colleen do that, do the honors. And then we will flip the switch here and turn on our new Stream-O-Matic, and you'll be seeing the view from these cameras. So let's do a countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Goodbye, Twit Cottage. We'll see you at the Brickhouse.
There is
nothing wrong with your twit. Do not attempt to close this browser. We are controlling the stream. We control the video. We control the audio. You are about to participate in a new online adventure. You are about to experience the sights and sounds of the new Twit Studio. Please stand by. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Twit from the new Twit Brickhouse. I'm Leo Laporte, and we are going to have a great show today. The first show we've ever done from our new studios to my left. I brought in all my old friends, my old Tech TV buddies, starting with Kevin Rose to my left. It's great to have you, Kevin.
Thanks,
now
man.
At milkinc.com. Yeah. And to my right, my old friend Patrick Norton, host of Techzilla, techzilla.com, and my old partner from the Screensavers, and of course, John C. Dvorak over on the far right. Steve Gibson's stuck in traffic. He'll join us in just a little bit. But I thought it would be fun because this place looks a little bit like the old Screensavers set.
A lot of rust in here.
There's a lot of rust. It's kind of neat, isn't it?
I've been fighting an urge to climb the superstructure in
you
here.
You can.
The first time I saw it.
You can. We've been swinging off that since we put it in. That stuff is rigged.
It's not really something you want to tell me in the middle of a live broadcast.
How much, Brent, by how much weight can that rigging hold?
Go on, do it.
Thousands of pounds. Patrick could swing on that.
That's the problem. He should be the CEO.
He should be. He'd do better than anybody. Meg Whitman moves in and she says, you know, that Leo Apotheker really was a clown.
Good for her.
Everything he did, we're going to undo. And we're going to start with bringing back the PC division.
I wrote a column in MarketWatch saying that this is going to be a disaster. And I've taken it back. I think that she's on the right track. She's doing the right thing. She's recognized. I don't see that she has the skill set. But now that she's there, I've got no complaints yet.
You know what? She's got balls. Well, she doesn't actually literally have balls. That would be a miracle. But she has guts. She does have guts. It takes a lot of nerve to come in to take over as a CEO and immediately say,
what, trash the old guy?
Throw it. Yes. I guess not. Actually,
no,
that's
not
exactly
that
what you do. You get three envelopes. So she blamed the old guy and started.
Well,
she
did a couple of the right things. One, I talked to people about this. And it's like when you're in the business of selling servers and you're trying to get a huge corporate account,
you can't. You got
to
have hardware.
You have to. Well, they can have the servers. They were going to just sell servers, but not the PCs. But these companies want a complete package.
Yes.
They want you coming in with the services and the servers and the PCs. They don't want you to go, oh, and by the way, you can get some PCs from Lenovo.
But I got to say, HP consumer PCs are not so hot. They got to fix that up.
No,
is that what you're
bad.
Using, Julie Odell?
Yeah, I am.
You're using an HP.
I am using an HP, and I'm very happy with it.
PoBook.
ProBook.
Oh,
come on.
ProBook. I missed the
Pro.
It's a PoBook.
It's not a PoBook. Dang.
Whatever happened to Poe Bronson anyway?
And with that belt buckle.
Yeah, PoBook. It's time.
That's just the worst.
You wrote a good article, okay. And I'm actually very excited about these ultralight.
MacBook Air competitors.
Yeah, they're basically. I mean, I'm using an Air. I like the Air. HP's got one. Asus has a new one. The Zen
so
that people
Dell.
Are raving. Dell's got one. They're all pretty much the same. Intel's been the one that's
they're just
been pushing
little
this.
Bitty, tiny, itty bitty baby computers.
Have
that's
you,
fine.
Have you played with any of these?
I need a grown up machine, sir.
You do have a
grown up
machine.
Things, and I don't mean look at
that's a mighty big
websites.
Machine for a little girl
well,
like
I...
you.
Pardon me. I was trying so hard.
You did great right up to that point. You were doing great.
1 hour, 19 minutes. And that's as far as I can go.
Oh, that was very nice. We'll bleep it out. It's okay.
Okay, thank you. No, but seriously, I mean, I do a lot of video editing for VentureBeat.
Oh, you do?
Some of it I do.
Well,
I'm
you
trying
need
to
that.
Get away from
then you
it
do need a heavy-duty machine.
I need a... Well, I would feel... Not to denigrate what you do, sir, but I would feel a little bit silly running around with it.
See, that's what you could have said.
I'm so used to like.
You said, wow, that's
machines.
A mighty small computer for a big boy like you. Because it is. It's lightweight.
It's itty bitty.
As the show
do
goes down the toilet.
Jolie, what's the resolution on that screen?
I haven't the faintest.
It's 13 inch screen.
Care.
Let me see if I can
find
it.
This is smaller than my last one.
Oh, the screen that you have.
Or the screen that you
have.
Look it
up. Look it up. No,
well, this one that you have is probably 1366 by 768, Leo.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. There something like that, yeah.
But that one, I mean, see, I think you've got...
Yes, you're for it. He nailed it. He nailed it.
You've got enough...
Nailed it.
It's almost like I've been doing this for a few years.
Nailed it. But I believe that the Ultrabooks are going to be higher resolution, aren't they?
Well, in order to do things like video editing, any kind of productivity work, 1366 by 768 is... it's not enough. It's
do you need enough. A 1080? Do you need 1080?
Yeah. Well, or
you need a desktop machine with three screens is what you need. Get off these little things.
That really helps. But if you're traveling, you don't have that luxury.
Right.
But 1600 by 900, my opinion, is the minimum that you need to be. You
mainly because it's 16:9 ratio, right? I mean, mainly because of the screen ratio.
Right.
Although,
right.
Wait a minute, 1366 by 768 is 16:9. It's just smaller, right. 16:9.
It is.
So the Asus 11-inch is the same as this. These are both roughly 11-inch screens. The 13 is, as you say, 1600 by 900.
That's where you get to have two things side by side, and you can actually still get stuff done, because that's what, you know, if I'm covering a show or something and I'm either in the press room or in my hotel room, I need to have, you know, my notes and web browser and stuff on one side and whatever I'm editing in on the other side. I can't be flipping back and forth or I won't get any work done.
That makes sense. There's only a couple of things people care about. One is that. I mean, they don't care about CPU so much or RAM so much.
They should.
Well, I mean, the raw speed. I think battery life is probably the biggest
concern. CPU speed and
you
memory
do?
Is
really?
More important. Yeah, well, if you use Photoshop a lot or you do a lot of these things where you actually need a little power.
You know, this
well,
has
I mean,
a
are
very...
Are we talking about what consumers, like people who...
Normal got, people.
Normal folk.
Not in the milieu.
Not in the milieu. Who is going to buy these and why are they going to buy them, the tiny little computers?
Because they're pretty.
Well,
because it does everything they want without tying them down, without having
and they are desktop and they are desktop replacements.
Ugh, please,
no, not the Airs, I mean, not the ultralights.
The Air is not. That's my point.
I don't want a desktop replacement.
Something with a 1600 by 900 screen is a desktop replacement. Something with a 1366 by 768 screen is a companion machine. It's the thing that you take. That you want to...
Are normal people
going to have any use for a companion machine?
Right.
Do they
only,
need...
Only a true geek would have both a desktop and a laptop.
Yeah, no, so that's not true.
Absolutely right.
I don't know that people care.
No, bull crap.
I just don't think people want to be...
So is the Ultrabook... What the Ultrabook is aimed at, Ed? Is that aimed at the second computer? Or is this Intel's desire to create let's be honest... It's air jealousy.
Well, it's air jealousy, but you can also say that in many of these cases where somebody, you know, where company A accuses company B of copying them, what they're really doing is responding to the same
market forces.
Market demand. Yeah, yeah. Market force.
Well, who made the netbook first, and isn't the air just a...
Asus made the first netbook.
And they had those crappy Atom processors in them, but the market force that they were responding to was people wanted to have one computer that did a simple suite of tasks for them that they could take, you know, to a coffee shop, or they could take to their friend's house or their relative's house, and then they could sit at home and do these things. And they're not very demanding in terms of the tasks that they do, but they wanted to be able to pick this thing up and move it around.
But most people don't do demanding tasks. They surf and they do email, right? Or maybe they'll watch video. Do people really need... I mean, how many people do Photoshop or video editing? I mean, that's an unusual...
Yeah, I think the more people... I don't know about that. I think more people are using photo editing software, not necessarily Photoshop, than ever before, because everyone's got these damn cameras.
Oh, but that's just pushing a button on your smartphone. And I agree, like filtering and making your photos look all retro.
Yeah, but that's what's so cool about this.
That's what Instagram is.
Built, yeah, that's what
it's all
built in.
Dumber than a sack of hammers and a complete...
You don't even have one.
Anymore.
It is, but you know what? Well, so maybe 70% of the market is dumber than a box of hammers.
They're selling okay.
No, I mean, people love that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So,
well, duh.
But I'm wondering, you know, are people interested in doing desktop photo editing, or is it all living here?
I'll tell you, we're going to get more Jolie O'Dell on the show. And that guy, that young guy, that new guy, John C. Dvorak, I think he's going places. We should bring him back on the show as well. We're going to take a break. When we come back, a little bit of a sad note. We'll take a look at the passing of Steve Jobs and how we covered it on the Twit Network. It was while we were on the air that it happened, so we'll see that. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about one of our favorite sponsors, Ford Motor Company. Ford is a 21st century car company, but not just the cars, the cabin, the inside. That's where they're really getting state of the art. We were able to drive new Fords a couple of weeks ago, the 2012 Fiesta, Focus, and Mustang. And one of the things I wanted to show you was a Ford Sync. As seen, the entertainment portion, as seen in the new Focus. we were kind of having some fun with it, so take a look. Hey, everybody, Leo Laporte. I thought we'd take a little ride. We've been talking about the Ford Sync and my Ford Touch for so long, and I've never actually shown you how it works. You know, Ford sent down this new 2012 Ford Focus, not mine to keep, alas. But I would like to show you, as long as I've got it, a little bit about the nav and the services and the app link and all the cool things. Let's get inside and I'll give you a tour of the 2012 Ford Focus. I'm just going to go for a little ride. Look, see this button? Watch. I got my foot on the brake. You press the button. It's a fob. Keyless. Car starts up. Oh, here we go. I like this, too, when the screen comes on. It says, hello, good morning. You're arriving. You're driving a Ford. All right, let's go here. Yeah, this is nice. This is sweet. Hands on the wheel, eyes on the road. That's the whole idea behind Sync and my Ford Touch. But you hit this paddle right here, and you can do anything. So one of the nice things, of course, about Sync and my Ford Touch is I can connect to a cell phone. I've got my iPhone hooked up here. But not just as a phone, I can make calls with it, of course, but I can also use it as a media device. So watch, I'll play a song here.
Please say a command.
Audio.
Audio, say a command.
Play artist Steely Dan.
Playing artist Steely Dan.
And now without doing anything, I've picked an artist. I can do the same thing with podcasts, books on tape or audiobooks, anything that's on my devices, I can play. I can even say, let's play the radio. The idea is you can do anything you want with this. You've got a whole media hub, so if you've got a Nano, the kid's Nano, if you've got a phone via USB or Bluetooth, you just talk to it and tell it what you want to hear. Let's give it a try here. This is while I'm driving. USB.
USB.
Play artist Steely Dan. Now that's cool, isn't it? It's little things like that to just make it a pleasure to drive a Ford. I love that Ford Focus, and I love Ford Sync. You know, I got it in my 2010 Mustang. It's just a lifesaver. Drive a Ford near you, and we thank them so much for their support all year long of the Twit Network, and we're glad to say they'll be back for 2011. In fact, I'm going to have a dinner with Alan Mulally, the CEO of Ford, in a couple of weeks at CES. I will pass along your greetings. If you have any questions for Alan, things you'd like me to bring up, you can email me, leo@twit.tv, and I'll be glad to pass them along during that dinner. It's a small, intimate gathering for just a few tech journalists because he wants to find out what we think of Ford, what we think of the Ford Sync, and I'd love to pass along your opinions too. So leo@twit.tv, and I'll collate those thoughts and pass them along to Alan. Let's move on. Of course, I think arguably, there were so many big stories this year, but the passing of Steve Jobs was certainly the most emotional story, and for many of us, the most personal story of the year. We found out about it while Tom Merritt and I were live on the air. We were doing our show Triangulation. Kevin Marks was our guest, and as always, it was the chat room that first told me. Let's take a look.
Interrupt briefly because we're starting to see some activity on Twitter about Steve Jobs, and I just want to check on this because we don't want to fall for a phony story, but I believe AP is reporting that Steve Jobs has passed away. So we're going to check this real quickly before we go any farther, and of course you know, there was a rumor, remember, a couple of weeks ago that he had. And we will check that and get it as quick as we can. It is across. It's one of those things that's all over Twitter. AP is saying that Steve Jobs has passed away.
But AP have said things that aren't true before. So.
Yeah, so we will absolutely check on this. But it is absolutely all over Twitter right now. That would explain, of course, why Steve Jobs did not make an appearance yesterday. Did you work with Steve, or was it after Steve's era when you went to Apple?
I actually went there just as he came back. As I said, we've been doing these CD-ROM things, and then the internet did for CD-ROMs. So the company I was working for, we didn't manage to jump in time, to pivot in time, if you like. The engineering side had been saying, let's work on the web, let's do more web-based stuff. The business side was like, no, these CD-ROM things are enormously profitable. We make $1 million for doing one of these. We should keep doing those. And that was true up until Christmas 96, and suddenly that wasn't true anymore. And then we was trying to do the web development, but with the same kind of production model that we had for the CD stuff, which was you know, didn't really have a great fit. And one of the things that I wanted to do was to build the 3D Atlas of the web, and we had a prototype that was downloading tiles over the internet.
Yeah, Apple is now confirming this, by the way. Apple is confirming. Yeah, Steve Jobs. Yeah, please do a breaking news right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Actually, I'm glad you're here, Kevin. I can't imagine anybody better to have here to do a talk about.
That's really sad.
It's very sad. He was very young. And, of course, MarketWatch has the story right now.
Wall Street Journal also reporting. Yeah. No details, just the fact that Apple has reported it.
Very sad. How much did you work with Steve at the time?
Not only indirectly. I didn't work with him directly. I saw him in the early 90s when he was at Next. We went and pitched the media editing stuff to him there.
Yeah.
That was when I got the sort of full force of the Steve demo in a small room.
Tell me about that. What is that like?
That was we were visiting the developer guy there. Talking about video editing, what was possible on the next step. And then Steve walked in with a lawyer he was pitching the next machine to, and then sat down and gave this almost a one-on-one full press demo of the next and what it could do, and you know how you could have audio and video and full images in your email, how you could revolutionize communication in the company, and how this would change everything. And, you know, it was very much a net-centric vision in like 1992. One-ish. So it very much, he had that insight at that time. And you know, the next was what the web was built on. So that that sort of insight early on that networking was the future was definitely a big chunk of that was Steve's vision too.
Contrast that to Microsoft, where you know, they didn't know for another 3 or 4 years that the internet was going to be anything.
They didn't see that coming. And there's a great video of Steve Jobs from the developer conference in 1996-97 where he's doing Q&A with the audience. This is before he'd actually been appointed CEO, I think. This was 97. And he said, I have this idea of things that we could do by connecting the computer to the network, and there are a bunch of products that I really want to build here. And if you listen to that talk, you can actually see the prefiguring of all the things that were built out later.
In 1997.
1997. He always had this long-term view.
Let me play a little bit of that. I think I have it at the 97 closing keynote. I think this is it. This is the Worldwide Developers Conference. I'll skip.
Thank you, and you know, you've changed my life. And I sort of thought about that for a while. I thought, that's really rude. And it probably happens to him all the time, and I don't want to be like that. So I didn't do it. And in a way, I'm kind of glad that I hesitated, because it gives me an opportunity to thank him this morning in a public setting among people who probably understand that better than anyone else on the planet. So it's a special pleasure this morning to introduce and thank a person who has changed so many of our lives, Steve Jobs.
This is from the 1997 WWE. D.C. Jobs had just come back.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Interesting.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
There's a lot of developers happy to get Steve back, I'll tell you that.
Thanks. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And I really appreciate you not interrupting me for my dinner with what was hopefully a beautiful woman. I wanted to come and just have a chat this morning. I know you've been getting lots of presentations all week, so I didn't want to do a big fancy presentation. But what I wanted to do was just chat. And so we get to spend 45 minutes or so together, and I want to talk about whatever you want to talk about. I have opinions on most things, so...
I'm going to pull up very quickly.
We're
watching this talk, but I'm going to pause it for a moment and pull up very quickly apple.com/Steve Jobs, where they are now putting up the announcement that Steve Jobs passed away at the age of 56. There it is. Apple has lost a visionary and creative genius, and the world has lost an amazing human being. Those of us who have been fortunate enough to know and work with Steve have lost a dear friend and an inspiring mentor. Steve leaves behind a company that only he could have built, and his spirit will be forever the foundations of Apple. They are sending people to an email address. If you have a memory you'd like to share or just condolences you'd like to share, rememberingsteve@apple.com.
Apple headquarters in California. People are mourning there. Also, right here in the nation's capital in Washington, D.C., at the Apple store. People all over the world are mourning the loss of Steve Jobs. Leo Laporte is the host of the nationally syndicated Tech Guy radio show on Premier Radio Networks. He's the founder of his own internet-based technology network, This Week in Tech. He's interviewed Steve Jobs many times. Leo, what goes through your mind on this sad day?
You know, we were so prepared for this. We knew it was coming, and yet it's still such a shock, and it's so sad. And I'm really trying to focus on celebrating his life. This is a guy who lived his life exactly as he wanted to. Woz said that Steve exceeded every goal he ever set for himself. He's a guy who lived his dreams and changed our lives as a result.
What made him so amazing? Was it his education? Was it his family? Was it his background growing up in California? There must have been some spark there that created this genius.
What are the ingredients that make somebody like that? You know, he was a college dropout. It wasn't his education. I think there was something inside him that drove him to exceed. He didn't care what other people thought. He cared about making great stuff. And he succeeded every step of the way. He stumbled, occasionally made mistakes. He wandered in the wilderness after being fired at Apple. And yet he kept coming back. And I think it was his extraordinary drive that really made him the man he is.
Now, in your interviews with him, what was he like as a person? Was he easy to get along with? Did he like to chat? Did he talk about sports or baseball or something? Or was he simply focused on technology?
Steve was very focused. There's a famous story about him coming into a conference room and somebody starting to chat about the weekend and him saying, "Can we raise the tone of conversation here?" He was a get-to-work guy. When Steve walked in the room, it was really apparent immediately that he knew he was the smartest guy in the room. Usually, he was absolutely right. He was down to earth. And later, in the last few years, he really didn't do very many interviews. He didn't trust the press. He didn't like the press. He wanted to control very tightly the image of Apple and his own image. He was a control freak in every sense of the word. And yet, he inspired us all. I mean, without Steve Jobs, you wonder, where's the excitement going to come from in this industry?
That's a good question, and I don't think anyone really appreciates that. Leo, thanks very much. Aaron Burnett is still with us.
Because he's great. Also here from Gadget.com, Ryan Block. Good to have you, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
You wrote some interesting things on Jobs' passing. I guess everybody here did. I didn't because I talk, not write. But I talked some interesting things. This was a week. Tuesday, Apple announces the iPhone 4S in a strangely somber event. I wasn't at the event. You were at the event.
I was there, yeah.
And we saw the video later, and that's when it hit me. I didn't know at the time. Did you feel like the Tim Cook and... the others were a little bit down?
You know,
I heard people who were there say that they thought Tim Cook was a little nervous.
Maybe.
And I definitely heard people say after the fact that they thought that maybe he was a little depressed. I didn't really get that.
It was all in hindsight, I guess.
Here's what I think. I mean, maybe they knew that he, you know, that Steve was about to pass, or that he had just passed, and we found out about it a couple days later. I don't really know. What I do know is that these guys are so heavily trained to do these keynotes that they've rehearsed it so many times,
right,
that when you get up there, your mind just goes blank.
You just and do it.
Yeah, you're just doing it. So I really actually don't think that there was probably a whole lot of latent emotion going on there. And I think just generally, like, if you want to kind of get the Steve feel during one of these things, you got to tone it down a little bit. You
have to
be supremely...
Not bring it up, but tone
it down. Yes, tone it down. Just be supremely confident. I think that is actually what really separates, you know, a Steve note from many of these other tech keynotes where, you know, the random CEO of, you know, whichever company you'll have is, you know, gets out on stage and is super pumped and, you know, Steve Ballmer sweating. That is actually like the anti.
That shows Steve. A lack of command. No, I agree with you. In any performance, the great performers are relaxed.
Yeah.
They're present.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have an internal energy and centeredness, but they don't have a lot of external energy coming out of them. I agree with you. I think that's true of performance in general.
And if you watch that, I noticed that even in just that little clip, Tim Cook, you know, is holding his hands together like this, like Steve used to do. He makes the same kind of gestures, does the same kind of sagely head nod. That
they get a lot of media training, I'm sure.
I'm sure they do, and I'm sure you know that probably Jobs may have spent some time with him if there was time for him to. You know, to give them a little coaching.
They have a very rigorous program that they've adhered to for years about how these keynotes go, how you get trained to do a keynote when they have guests up from other companies. You know, they always have app demos now during these iPhone events. There's, you know, some stories that have come out about, you know, what exactly that looks like as a third party company doing a demo on Apple's stage. I mean, it is. To say it's rigorous is actually kind of reductive. I mean, it is just downright crazy from what people have reported.
Did you see the chair in the front row with the reserved sign on it?
I did not see that.
Yeah. It shows up in the video, of course. It's front row on the aisle where the executives sit. Obviously, a reserve for Steve Jobs, whether he'd be there or not. There was a story, and I don't know how true it was, that Jobs watched the keynote in his comfy chair, drinking his favorite apple juice and eating rice pudding. I don't know how true. We have no idea if that's true.
The author may have been drinking apple juice. but it could be true, and he smiled afterwards.
That's what they said, the family said that Steve Jobs passed away the next morning, so I'm gonna give that credence. Yeah. It did feel somber to me, and maybe, again, it's hard to say. In hindsight, you were there, you were watching.
You know, I really didn't walk away thinking, like, oh, man, something bad happened.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's kind of easy to, like, kind of apply, you know, that.
Yeah, it's 2020 hindsight.
Right. It felt very low-key, but it was meant to. Right?
Let's pretend that Steve Jobs did not pass away afterwards, which, of course, changes everything. Did it seem to you to be... a disappointment, a letdown, the phone itself?
No. I mean, I think there were a couple of factors that came into play here. One, people forget that Apple has a cycle to their product launches.
Right.
And, you know, this kind of follows their cycle. For them, it's been every other year has been the big launch. You know, the original iPhone is a big launch, but it wasn't the iPhone that they knew was going to make them a worldwide success. It was their entrant. They had to get that product out the door.
Right.
It was the 3G that they really got behind. And that's the one where if you look at the sales charts over
that's
the years,
interesting.
That's when they hit the hockey stick, is on the 3G. 3GS was an upgrade. They sold a gazillion of those things, but we all kind of acknowledged that was a minor upgrade. And then the 4, again, huge hit.
Right.
And then now the 4S. So, I mean, you
know. So it's every other one.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like... For the iPhone, that this was some huge shock that it wasn't the quote-unquote 5 that I think had been kind of... And, you know, it really didn't help that some of the sites that had been starting these rumors, you know, as I guess they really started
kind of
kicking off
from April. We heard
everything
from there's going to be a new iPad, there's going to be two iPhones, there's going to be a Facebook application. I mean, there was a lot of hype. around.
Would it really start? I actually went back and kind of looked around. It really started in April with one kind of big report about the iPhone 5, and that right. this year was going to be a huge year for the iPhone. Expect one of the bigger screen, and you know all this stuff, the teardrop shape. It all came from this one report.
That's what happens, isn't it? It becomes, you forget the source, you forget that it was a single source.
Yeah, it becomes like this mysterious
canon.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's very weird,
and we all believe it.
But I think this was a huge launch. Mainly
you
because
do, Mike.
I do, mainly because of Siri. And from a business perspective, which I think is mainly what Ryan is talking about, it's a slight continuation of the trajectory that started previously. But from a cultural perspective, I think 10 years from now, we're all going to be talking to our computers, all of our computers, to artificial intelligence agents like Star Trek. And I think that this will be traceable back to this moment.
This was the day that started.
Exactly. Now the Android fans...
Android does it, but it doesn't talk back to you.
The Android didn't mainstream it. Okay, we remember the mainstreamers. We remember the Edisons and the Fords, people who didn't invent the light bulb with a car, but the mainstream...
That's what Steve Jobs is. I mean, he didn't invent the personal computer. He didn't invent the GUI. He didn't invent the MP3 player. He didn't invent the smartphone. Right. He didn't even invent the tablet.
So this is a new interface like the iPhone introduced the touch interface to the world. Again, right. there was already devices out there that had... multi-touch interfaces, but
this will be the popularization.
Right, and yeah. in the future when you're using, 5 years, 10 years from now, our desktops are going to be like iPads with Siri. That's how we interact with our computers, with touch and voice, and it'll all be traceable back to this announcement and the 2007 iPhone announcement.
Well, you and I have been around a while, and of course we've been saying both, I'm sure, for years that the GUI, the user interface hasn't changed since 1984 when Apple came out with the mouse and Windows interface. Yeah. And everybody was, I think we were all saying, well, what would be the next big thing? And it would be speech. Yeah. It would be touch.
Just like Bill Gates said it would.
We knew it.
Yeah.
But it happened finally. Yeah. Now, we've all tried Siri, but nobody's here tried the new Siri Assistant.
Nope. Well, if I had tried it, I wouldn't be able to talk about it.
Ah.
So there's that. But, I mean,
that doesn't help us at all. So Samsung... love this story. Go ahead.
Wait. Before we move on, I did want to say just one other quick thing about.
Please, I don't want to rush us because this is a huge topic.
You know, I mean, we've talked a lot about Apple, and I have mixed feelings about like doing any media about Steve's passing. It just feels kind
of. You know what
strange.
We did, and this didn't feel strange at all when it happened. Of course, we immediately went into kind of that live coverage. We did it. I stayed here with a bunch of people till 8, and then Eric Lanigan took over and took calls till midnight. And what I felt like, it was almost a wake. It was when something like this happens to our community, and he really was a part of our community, there's such grief that it's just valuable to just talk it out. Yeah. So we weren't trying to analyze it. We weren't trying to say what happens next. We were just talking about our feelings, and that was great.
So... there's a swear in this tweet, but I want to pull up a tweet if we could.
Sure.
It's got a bad word in it.
That's okay. Brace yourself,
it's
kids.
It's from Anil Dash. So it's Anil's latest.
Is he Anil Dash on Twitter? Anil, of course, was for a long time with Six Apart. I think he left, didn't he?
Yeah,
where is he now?
He did. He's working on a government project now called Something Labs. I can't remember.
Oh, Expert Labs. That's right. He brought Gina in, of course.
Yeah, yeah. So that top one?
The effed up thing... is that every other, make it big, every other Fortune 500 CEO thinks people will leave flowers and tributes to their memory after they die too. And that's really true. If you go to any Apple store, there are Post-it notes on the window. There are bit apples. There are candles. This is like when Michael Jackson passed. Mm-hmm. This is our... Om Malik said this. In fact, we asked Om to be on the show, and he said it was too personal for him to talk about. But Om said he's our Elvis. And in a way, I think he is.
Or our John Lennon.
It reminded me very much
more
of December 8th.
We're closer to John Lennon.
Yeah, it really reminded... Now, John Lennon was killed in violence suddenly, unexpectedly, but it did feel very similar.
Well, see, I think he's our Elvis and our John Lennon, because if he's our Elvis, then who is our John Lennon? I mean, he's the only person in his class of adulation, really.
And I can't think of a single business leader that anybody would feel this way about.
So, you know, I was thinking a lot about this, why people feel this way, why so many people who'd never met him feel this way, and I think there are a lot of reasons. You know, I personally consider myself very fortunate to have crossed paths with him on a number of occasions.
Did you get to interview him much? Or...
I've never gotten to interview him. Very few people.
He was anti-press. It was very difficult. Walt Mossberg looks like the only, and David Pogue, the only guy.
I don't think Pogue has ever actually.
No, he has. Yes. Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. You know, people feel the sense of connection with Steve, I think maybe through the keynotes, but I think it actually came most from the products. And I was thinking about why this is. And, you know, part of it is Steve's goal with every product that he made was to create something that I think that he felt people could connect to. And that was intuitive.
And yet he didn't do focus groups. He didn't ask people. He said you should never ask a consumer what they want. Because they'll tell you they want what they've got now, only better, faster, cheaper.
I love Kawasaki's comment.
Wasn't that great?
That an Apple focus group is the left side of Steve Jobs' brain talking to the right side.
You know, and I think what we wound up with in the end was, you know, a series of products that some of us have had for, you know, decades, depending on how far back you go with using Macs, that, you know, in the end, it wasn't just that the products worked well and made sense and were intuitive in ways that other products weren't. And it wasn't even that they were products that we were able to forge emotional bonds with, that I think that we, you know, before the iPhone, I don't think people had very many emotional bonds with their cell phones, for example. Right. This is something that very early on in the early days of Engadget, like 2004, it's really what drew me to doing a site just about consumer electronics is the emotional bond that you form with a piece of hardware sometimes.
It's very interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
But it wasn't those things to me. What it was, I think, was that because these products made sense and because these products were usable, they made you feel like somebody understood you, right. That Steve understood you.
Right.
And I think that might be a big part of the reason why people felt such an emotional connection with him as an individual.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah. One of the stories I wanted to point out in this shows how emotional people in Silicon Valley got as a result of Steve's death. Brian Lamb, who was the editor at Gizmodo when the iPhone 4 prototype incident happened, wrote this remarkable apology, essentially, for the way he behaved. And from reading it, and maybe Ryan knows a little bit more about this than I do, but it reads almost as though one of the reasons that Brian left was because of was the result of the iPhone 4 incident and the way they handled it.
He felt bad.
He felt really bad. And
he called himself an a-hole.
I can't speak for Brian. I mean, I think he would have to speak to that. He's one of my dear friends, and I had a lot of conversations with him at the time when this was happening, and everything he describes in the piece on the Wirecutter is exactly how I remember it going down behind the scenes. Of course, I've never been able to talk about it. I mean, he can talk about it freely. I think that there are definitely some misgivings about the way that that Gawker Media as a company wanted to handle that story, and I think maybe there were some differences between how the editorial staff wanted to treat it and how, you know, the people who run Gawker wanted to treat it. But, all that stuff is kind of... I think at the end you see that Steve maybe thought it was water under the bridge. And I think that's kind of the important part is, you know, that you got to... At least Brian got to, you know, bury the hatchet a little bit.
I love that he talks about getting a call from Steve Jobs when they have the iPhone 4 prototype. The call goes, "Hi, this is Steve. I really want my phone back." The fact that he called is very interesting. He says he wasn't demanding. He was asking, and he was charming, and he was funny. I was half naked just getting back from surfing, but I managed to keep my stuff together. I appreciate you had your fun with our phone, and I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at the sales guy who lost it. But we need the phone back because we can't let it fall into the wrong hands. I thought, maybe it's already in the wrong hands. He continued, "There are two ways we can do this. I can send someone to pick up the phone." Brian says, "I don't have it." "But you know someone who does." "Or we could send someone with legal papers, and I don't want to do that." He was giving us the easy way out. And before he hung up, this is what I love. He said, "By the way, what do you think of it?" And that is, yeah. I think that says it right there. This is not, I think we often see him as a calculating machine, mm-hmm. as a person who was calculating every moment. But I think he genuinely loved these products he was creating. Yeah. And he's saying, Brian, so what'd you think? You like it? I mean, that is a guy who really wants to know.
Leo, I think that is very calculating. I mean, I think he was charming. I think he was – I think what he wanted to do was probably scream at him. But he knew that this was a journalist, and this is how Steve Jobs and other people in that position treat journalists. He was buttering him up.
I've never heard of Steve buttering up a journalist, to be honest.
He would do it. I mean, look at.
Well, you know, this is the kind of lore that we're going to be able to debate for generations.
I know. I love it. He is already becoming mythology, isn't he?
Oh, he was mythology while still alive.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he could quiet a room. Mention that he might be coming.
And I think both are true. I think he was a very calculating chess player, and I think he was also a very nice guy.
Yes, I think you're right.
I was very proud of our coverage that night. I think for us especially, that was a very emotional and difficult time. And one of the things that's really a blessing about doing what we do is getting to share those very profound personal moments with you together as a community. And I think that that's exactly what happened that week on all of our shows. But on a lighter note, we're going to wrap this up with some fun bloopers and moments from the year 2011. Before we do, I just want to thank you for being a part of the TWiT family, for watching and listening all year long, and invite you to keep doing so. I promise we work our butt off to bring you the best content, the most enjoyable shows, the shows where you learn the most, and we sure have a heck of a lot of fun doing it, so I hope you'll continue to come back. My thanks to the producer of TWiT, Eileen Rivera, to our many, many hosts, including, of course, John C. Dvorak, and to all the folks who've edited TWiT. Lately, it's been Chad Johnson, right? Almost all of our editors, Tony Wang and Jeff Stewart, even I think occasionally Jason Howell have edited the show. To get it out in a prompt fashion so that you can watch it Monday morning. So thanks to everybody who works so hard behind the scenes. But again, thanks mostly to you because we couldn't do it without you. And now we'll wrap it up with some upbeat moments from the year 2011. Thanks. Have a happy holidays. Happy New Year from all of us at TWiT.
It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show that covers your... What are you looking at me funny for? Oh, my gosh. Hello, Little John. That covers all your tech needs. This is our Halloween edition, and I guess everybody's in costume today. But before we begin, we need to press the green button. Would you do the honors, Little John?
A little harder.
I'll do it for you. So, that signals the start of the show and electrocutes somebody in the state of Texas. So it's very exciting, that button. Yeah. So... John C. Dvorak and Robert Scoble are out back smoking a doobie, so it's just you and me, O'Malik.
Can I go smoke a doobie?
Go
too?
Smoke a doobie. Go
Except
smoke
I
a doobie.
I need to get one.
Actually, that's the funniest thing that Siri says. If you say, if you tell Siri, I want to buy some weed, it looks for head shops. If you say, I want to buy some drugs, it gives you the names of nearby drug rehab centers.
Yeah. One of the ways I would summarize a lot of that is that we don't have to ask permission anymore.
Yeah.
And we didn't necessarily have to ask before, but to reach a vast audience, you kind of did.
Yeah.
You needed some gatekeeper to say yes. And Leo was our gatekeeper. We wouldn't just be in the studio without him, but he's a lot more accessible than some of the other gatekeepers. And we don't need him. We don't need Leo. It's on.
We have.
I just realized it.
We have occupied TWiT.
Occupy TWiT is on. Guys, grab your wives, grab your kids, grab your husbands.
We have occupied TWiT.
We are This is it. It is on. Tell everybody. Hashtag Occupy TWiT is going down right now. What are our demands, Nick?
Our demands are whiskey for everyone.
Whiskey for everyone. Bacon everyone.
We don't even have demands.
Freedom for everyone.
That's the whole point of Occupy TWiT.
Okay, so freedom.
There are no demands. Freedom.
Freedom is vague enough. Yeah. I think everybody can be pro-freedom for whatever that means for them.
Chocolate for everyone.
Occupy TWiT is on. This is the best thing I've done
in
years.
But wait a second. Is Leo the only 1%?
Leo's the 1%.
Leo's the 1%. Everyone else is the 99.
Wait, one demand.
Yes.
We want bathrooms.
We want bathrooms.
Yes.
That's true. Just like Occupy Wall Street.
Yes.
The parallels are uncanny, ladies and gentlemen. I think we've reached our real lesson here tonight, folks.
So
when you come as a guest to someone's show who's been nothing but gracious and generous to you, what you want to do is take over their shit. Just take it. Just take it all. This laptop is mine. This whiskey is mine. This camera is mine.
You guys are fired.
Thanks, oh, yeah. Leo. Leo LaPorte, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah,
thank you. Good to see you.
See you.
Thanks a lot, Leo.
And I think we have the name of our new show, Nick. Wait, Occupy
that
Twit.
That was the 1%. And get out.
He was pretty cool, actually, for the 1%.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you for tuning in to the inaugural edition of Occupy Twit.
Right. Yes. That's the thing.
Temporarily.
We're like, hey, we can move it away. Move it out of our view. And, say Americans don't want to do these jobs that are, really hard, long
really
hours.
Frosts my nuggets. Siri was down for 3 days.
It really frosts
can we just
my
3 days? Ladies and gentlemen, we have
can
to
we just pause at that so everyone can
frost my nuggets.
I have to go.
Can you explain what nuggets
are
you're talking
you speaking
about?
Of,
and
sir?
How are we frosting
and
them?
And where is this Kellogg's frost? Is it like a sugary frost?
Yes.
It's a freezer
is it
frost.
Yes.
It's a chill.
It's a chill
it's
in
a
the
chilling
air.
Effect
it's
on
a
your
chilling
nuggets.
Effect. Shrinkage.
I think we found the name of today's show.
Yeah. And that's why he's turned to the porn.
My nuggets on rye.
we've gone all over here from really. We've gone from the depths of deep philosophical discussion, or sorry, the heights of deep philosophical.
Oh, we've talked about porn.
To the depths of nuggets.
Yes,
Leo's nuggets.
We've gone porn, globalization, nuggets. What's next?
Let's let Leo segue because he's got time.
There's no story to go for
this is the rye talking.
This is the rye talking. I think we're going to take a break and then come back and then regroup.
So you can unfrost your nuggets.
I can warm up my nuggets with a little commercial from a company I call. Audible.com.
Yes.
Okay, everybody, can you turn out the lights? Robert Scoble just walked by.
Shh.
No one's
don't
home.
Say anything. So on the... I'm not kidding.
Sorry.
On the issue of the Kindle Fire...
Okay, shh. Just pretend he's not here.
Everybody check out on Foursquare.
Nobody's here! Go away!
Okay. He just walked back into the kitchen.
that's where it's the first place he always heads.
No but right now, I would like to talk a little bit about our friends at Squarespace.com.
You know, this is ironic because I literally just created a trial account and created poorscott.squarespace.com.
Did you? It's amazing how quickly you can do that.
Well, because it doesn't require any credit card.
No, you could do it right now. In fact, did you do that with me or somebody? We were saying, let's do an experiment and see... How quickly you can create a Squarespace account?
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, I mean,
you've done that on your show.
Oh, a number of times. In fact, we hold the record setter world record for the fastest website from conception to execution in the entire world.
And what is that record?
It's like 20 seconds.
And was it using...
It was using
Scott Johnson?
It was using Scott Johnson.
It was using Squarespace. There we go. I got to press the buttons right. It's a long, involved story, but apparently Scott and my computer have... merged.
They've melded. He's now Borg.
Melded together. Squarespace.com is the secret behind exceptional websites. Okay, watch. Count. Start counting. 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000, 4-1000.
You can't count.
You know what takes a long
time?
Thinking of a name. Brian is a unicorn.
There you go.
.squarespace.com. Password, flowers. email address, Brian... Brian at neverland.com. Okay, so now,
What's this?
Now I've got a site. Boom.
Boom. That's it.
That was pretty quick.
That's it.
And so does everybody watching Twit.
That's right, because you have the... You know what? Because they have the password, I guarantee you, within the next 30 seconds,
oh,
somebody's
going
to have the... It's all going
to
be
I don't even
out.
Have to, because I gave out the password.
Yeah, everyone has the flowers. Everyone has the flowers.
Everyone has the flowers. So let's go ahead and make that Brian is a unicorn.squarespace.com an extra special site. For the next 2 weeks, you all have complete privileges to log in there.
Oh, my gosh.
Should I just...
Should I view website?
Yeah, let's take a look.
Wait a minute. Let's wait. We're going to wait till the end of the commercial. There we go. I'll give you a minute or two to mess with it. So let's get some, a little more work, but they're doing that very quickly within the space of a commercial.
It was fast. Hacked again is the top. Again. Oh, there you go. Loot too legit to twit right there. Take a look at it now. Refresh. They already have it in there.
So what is the website address?
Brian is a unicorn at Squarespace or .squarespace.com.
Somehow the NSFW show has leaked into...
They're an active bunch, that crew.
Yeah,
they are. They are not shy about using the Squarespace tools. There we go.
And it's even got music.
Here, if you run all the way down.
We have just created the ultimate.
There it is.
This is our new Squarespace site. And you know what the beauty of this is? After the 2-week trial runs out, all they have to do is use the offer code TWIT7, and this music will stop. We figured out what the offer is. The music will stop when you use the offer code TWIT7.
Wow.
No, I think the deal is.
Thank
you. Thank you. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
This is either the worst or the best commercial you've ever had, Leo.
This is the new Squarespace Jingle, I believe, actually. Wow.
Wow. So that just happened.
Okay, one at a time. Everybody's talking at once. Nobody can hear a thing.
It's like a breakfast show.
We don't care. Thank you very much.
It's the view.
It's the view.
I don't care.
And are you Barbara Walters?
Me?
Yeah. Well, who are you?
I would be somebody.
What's your view name?
I want to be that pretty blonde one.
Yeah. You'll be Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Thank you. That's the one.
And I'll be Joy Behar. That makes sense, right? Kind of like a complaining, cranky, you know.
Do you find it troubling that Joshua knows all the people on The View?
Well, he probably watches it. That's what I think all those guys at that company do.
You get to be
everybody at Engadget or AOL?
Yeah, both.
Like, what?
What are you implying?
Leo is Whoopi.
I just saw a little clip of it for the first time. I've only seen the SNL sketch, which I think is hilarious. But I saw a clip of it, and I can't believe how similar Elizabeth Hasselbeck is to the character that Kristen Wiig does on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah,
am I just way off track
job.
Now? Nobody knows what I'm talking about.
No, we don't.
I know what you do. I know what you're talking about. She does a great job. She looks just like her.
Anyhow, one of you guys is Barbara Walters, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, somebody's Whoopi. Leo. Somebody's got to be Barbara Whoopi. Walters.
He's the interviewer of the old
time. And you're Whoopi.
I'd be Whoopi, absolutely. I've had it with you. I'm walking off.
Did you say I'd be Whoopi?
I'd be Whoopi.
I think we have a title.
I think yes.
Good that everyone who watches show is a fan of show. So now, ladies and gentlemen, I give you John C. Dvorak or Comrade Dvorak.
Wow.
So that way, I don't think we have to worry.
We got full circle back to the political.
Yes. You look good in the hat.
Matt, if you'd worn that hat,
got a hat, a hat kind of hat.
Finally found a hat.
Matt's wondering what the hell show he's gotten on.
I know. No one's given me a hat.
So Matt, you tweeted you had food poisoning last night. You feel better though, I think.
Feel better, Matt.
100% better. Yeah.
Thank you.
Was it something you ate at a restaurant?
So I cooked for the first or for the second time yesterday morning. So I assumed it was what I had made.
The
second time in your life?
Sort of. Not entirely.
Well, maybe you should take some lessons.
You need two different cutting boards. Okay. One for vegetables, one for the raw chicken.
If it's bacon, you want to cook it.
And don't cut your lettuce on where you just chopped up a bunch of raw chicken.
Yeah.
It's kind of a drawback.
Wash the lettuce. I assumed it was me because I'm obviously inexperienced there, but all I made was scrambled eggs.
No, you can't make yourself sick with
eggs. Eggs are the silent killer. Eggs will get you. Sneak up on you when you least expect them.
From Joshua Topolsky, Eggs, the silent killer.
That's funny.
Hey, Leo.
Hi.
Hey, you getting all jacked up on those caffeinated pants?
I am. You know, people probably think that's crazy. They can't have caffeinated pants.
They're real. They've sold 3.5 million pairs of them in France.
Oh, that explains it.
Oh, yeah.
So you're saying I see Lennon, I see France, I see Leo's caffeinated pants.
That's right. I mean, they're your people.
It's not just caffeinated. They're impregnated as well.
Oh, the shea butter is, I don't know if impregnated in pants is any kind of, that could start a bad internet rumor.
But they're like Spanx for men.
Yeah. How do you like that? Be thankful you're listening and not watching. Yeah. No, just kidding.
Yes. Losing listenership as we speak.
Yeah.
He's amazing.